I'd like to call the meeting of the Board of Technical Registration to order. Today's Tuesday, August 27th, 2019. It's 9 o'clock. And we will begin with our roll call.
Dr. Alejandro Angel. Jack Gilmore.
Here.
Neil Jones.
Here.
Jason Foose.
Here.
Jason Madison.
Here.
Carmen Wyckoff. Stephen Knoll. Andrew Everode.
Here.
Eugene Montgomery.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. We'll start with the call to public. Members of the public may address the board during this call to public for no more than 3 minutes, pursuant to ARS 38431.01H. The board members are not allowed to discuss or take legal action on matters raised during an open call to the public unless the matters are properly noticed for discussion and legal action. However, members may ask staff to review a matter or may ask that a matter be placed on a future agenda. This is the call to the public. Anybody that's signed up, you are on this list. You'll have your turn to speak when the item shows up. Is there anybody else that would like to sign in for a specific item? Okay. So we will begin with the call to the public. Is there anybody here to address the board in call to the public? I hear or see nobody. We will close the call to the public. Move on to adoption of the minutes. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? Does anybody have any comments, corrections, additions?
Mr. Chair, just for the record, page 5, the second to last paragraph, item C, assurance of discontinuance should be assurance of discontinuance. So Kurt's going to make the change for us.
Thank you. Is there anything else?
Make a motion to accept the meeting minutes with the spelling error corrected.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting the minutes with the correction?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Abstain.
We have one abstention. Motion passes. Okay, we're going to move on to item 5. Consideration of cases referred for formal hearing.
Can't do those yet. 9:30.
Thank you, Mr. Madison.
You're welcome. Didn't want you to head down the road.
We'll wait till 9:30 on those. So, if we move on to enforcement matters, is there anything that anybody would like to consent or get out of the way first? Before we move on.
Is there anybody on the list for the 6A items? Or the 6D items?
There's no 6As. There is 6D7.
Okay. Does anybody want to pull anything out of 6A or 6D other than 7?
Nope.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I will make a motion that we consent item 6A 1, 2, 3, and 4 for closure.
We're here for 6, 8, 4.
Oh. Okay. So 6, 8, 4, we've got to pull that out. Are they on the list?
They are on the list. That's my mistake. There's actually two people.
Okay, so...
Thank you for sounding off.
We'll consent item 6A, 1, 2, and 3 for dismissal or closure. And consent item 6D, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 to accept signed consent agreements.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to consent item 6A, 1, 2, and 3, and 6D, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Is that correct?
1.
And 1.
And 1.
There is somebody here for 1.
Didn't mention that. Okay, we'll pull one out.
amendment to the motion then?
Amendment to remove D1.
And you have an amendment to the second to D1?
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second for 6A, 1, 2, and 3, and 6D, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Is there anybody here on any of those items? Okay. There doesn't seem to be anybody here for 6A1, I'm sorry, 6A234 and 6D.
No. Wait. A1, 2, and 3.
A1, 2, and 3.
D, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
A, 1, 2, and 3. D, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6.
1, 2.
Not one.
One.
Okay, we got it.
This is easy. This isn't hard.
Just go.
We can do it.
I think next time we'll just go through the items.
About, yeah.
Okay.
Is there anybody here for 6B1 or 6B2?
Let's leave what we've got alone.
Give it a shot.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second to consent these items. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. All of the matters are consented. And the motion's passed. So, we will go to the list, the sign-in sheet, and the first person signed up is for 5A1, and he's scheduled for 9:30, so we will hold to that with Mr. Dixon. The next item is 6B2, Mr. Frank and Mr. Folk, if you would please approach us and state your names for the record.
I need to recuse myself.
We have a recusal. Mr. Gilmore is going to recuse.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Douglas Folk, preparing for Frank Civil Consulting.
And Michael Frank, Frank Civil Consulting.
Thank you, gentlemen. Synopsis of the complaint here is on June 10th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging the respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of engineering on a website without firm registration with the board. And the staff recommendation is to issue a letter of concern stressing the importance of confirming the complete name of the firm at the time of renewal, referring to that name while doing business in the state of Arizona. So, I'll open the floor up to Mr. Folk.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Michael Frank has had a registered civil engineering firm with the state since 2016. His original application listed the legal name of the company and a trade name issued by the Secretary of State's office, as he's entitled to do. And as we pointed out in the letter, we supplemented the record with the board's registration statute talks about firms as a person or persons wishing to practice engineering as group practice. The board statute says nothing about trade names. The trade name statute says any business in Arizona can do business under a trade name, and Mr. Frank has taken advantage of that, and that's how he does business. So he was fully compliant with the law when he applied for registration, and in fact his original registration listed the company under both names. Now, at some point along the way, it appears that the trade name was dropped on the board's computer system. I don't know how, and we're not suggesting that anything improper occurred here, but it just happened. And when he received his renewals, the renewal form listed only the legal name of the company, and I understand that Mr. Frank's wife, who's the business manager for the firm, just paid the fees to renew the application and no thought was given, because throughout they have done business as Frank Civil Consulting. They've listed their firm number when requested, and in fact the document that led to the complaint to this board was included the name and registration number of their designated principal, Jim Lennon. So the board has always been advised of who is the designated principal. They've done business consistent with their application, and any member of the public that wished to confirm who this company is had access to the board's records and the Secretary of State, where the correct information has been found throughout this time period. So I spoke with Mr. Kramer about this before, and I pointed out these facts, and Mr. Frank is here with me today to answer any additional questions that the board has, but we're not aware of any instance in which his firm has not complied with the law. And it's just unfortunate that the board's records for a period of time were incorrect. When he brought this to the attention of staff, the board's records were corrected. And they currently have the trade name again. So it's unfortunate that we're all here today to talk about this, but our client has not done anything in violation of statute or rule, and we honestly believe there's no basis for the board to issue a letter of concern here. I don't know what he would be directed to do, because he's entitled to do business as Frank Civil Consultant in the state of Arizona.
No, you go ahead. You raise your hand.
All right, Mr. Chairman of the board. The board's side is that he can use his trade name, certainly. He has the right to do that, but make it aware to the public that there are two names. There is a DBA involved here, and that's why the complaint was brought to the board in the first place, is the citizen got on our website and looked up Frank Civil Consulting, which it was dropped by the board, but in hindsight, it was also signed, the application was signed with that name, not having the DBA on it, by Mr. Frank or his and his principal. And so when the citizen looked it up, it didn't appear there, so it didn't appear that he was registered with the state. So the reason for the letter of concern is that he makes every effort to show this to the public that there is a DBA involved here and that he is registered, but that will eliminate that confusion. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind. I'm not really good in front of boards, but I'll do the best speaking as clear as I can. I take a lot of pride in my company. You know, every once in a while, you learn from things, and we've done everything we can when we've had a challenge to rectify those issues. The reason why I'm here today and the reason why I retained Doug is because I don't feel like I did anything wrong. We've done everything correctly. When we actually submitted our initial registration to the board put in Frank Civil Consulting. In other words, I didn't have to do that. We registered as 3B Ventures DBA Frank Civil Consulting. I don't know why it's my requirement to audit your records every year subsequent to that. We've always paid our dues on time. We've always been on time with everything. A little bit of history, just so you know. We started 3B Ventures in advance of Frank Civil Consulting because I didn't know what I was going to do. I built roads for almost 30 years when I retired in October of 2005. I wanted to maybe open a brewery. My daughter is a dancer, professional dancer, so we thought maybe she'd have a ballet studio. And then her husband-to-be was going to be a dentist, so it stood for ballet, brewery, and braces. Has nothing to do with Frank Civil Consulting. I did not see any relevancy here, and that's why we started Frank Civil Consulting as a DBA, initially to serve our development clients with pre-development services, pro forma estimates, constructability reviews, owner representation, those types of things. When we got into more engineering-related services in 2016, we were told how we needed to do it right, and we did it right. Jim Lemon is in charge of all of our engineering services. He seals and sees everything on our behalf. I now have 3 civil engineers on staff. You might know Mike Rhodes is now on staff with us, and Zach Smee. So I have 3 civil engineers. We do everything the right way. I don't think we did anything wrong here. We're just asking for this to go away so I can get back to work.
Members of the board, any questions, comments, discussion?
No, I think this was a board staff error, computer error. I move to dismiss the claim.
We have a motion to dismiss.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for the question. All in favor of dismissal?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank
Sorry
you
about
much.
The inconvenience.
It's all a question of individual responsibility.
Okay, we have 916. So the next person signed up is 61. Is it Robert Hirschberger?
Yes, that's correct.
Please come up and announce your name at the table.
61.
Yes, I'm Robert Hirschberger. I'm a practicing architect in Arizona since 1970s, 2012, when I retired. And I served as a faculty member at ASU, teaching design and programming for 18 years. I served at the U of A as a professor and dean for 14 years. During that time, I practiced architecture doing mostly institutional work, primarily churches, assembly buildings. I brought the complaint against Mr. Long when he supplanted LEA architects on a major addition to the assembly room at the Payson Library. I was aware that he had been practicing as a draftsman for quite a number of years. But for the past 4 years, I discovered that he was practicing as an architect, as a non-registrant. He had a website which made him sound like he was an international architect with vast experience. And he had, in his phone book, listed himself as an architect. He had also listed himself LinkedIn as an architect, probably 30 or more references to him as an architect in the literature. So there was no reason for a naive layman in Payson to suspect that he was other than an architect. That's the basis of my complaint. He also basically, when LEA architects who had been commissioned to do a preliminary study for an addition to their building, which is arguably the best public building in Payson from a design sense, when he followed their program, which had been approved by the town council at a regular meeting, it turned out that his estimate was higher than what the lay board that had been in charge of this activity wanted to pay for the building. Instead of asking him to look at the program and to reduce the scale of the project so that it can come within their budget, they apparently asked the then town the town manager what they should do. He advised them to go to Shannon Long to get a bid because he thought it would be lower than that of the architect that had been previously commissioned to do the work. The board followed his advice and went to Shannon Long, and he presented himself to the board. One board member has indicated to me that he said he was not a registered architect, although all of the literature that he had produced and put out for the public said he was. They proceeded to go along with that and to ask him to reduce the scope and provide a revised estimate and a bid, which he did do, and they basically decided to hire him without ever consulting with the original architect. Not hearing from them, the original architects apparently contacted them and discovered that they had decided to go with a non-registrant instead of a registered architect to do this addition to a public building. During my entire life as a professor, dean, and an architect, I assumed the responsibility of protecting the public health, safety, and welfare was a very important concern. I taught that. I taught exiting requirements. I taught problems of separation of different types of uses and so on. The students that went through my program for 5 years or 6 years.
Sir, this case is about this respondent, not about your academic experience.
Okay.
Please narrow this and focus to the case.
Well, the reason I'm back again is that he apparently thinks that he solved the problem of his misrepresentation himself to the board or to the client, and got a man who he had previously worked for, a registered architect, who had let his firm registration lapse in 2015, he got them to renew his firm registration through this board 3.5 years later. And the two of them together then claim that now they've solved the problem, they are now an architectural firm, and therefore this problem should go away. My reading of the AASR statute 32.141A and rule 321.28C3 says two things: that a non-registrant should not act as if he's a registrant. Two, it says that a registrant should not conspire with or abet a non-registrant to allow them to practice in order to get around these rules. That's precisely what this registrant is doing with this non-registrant. So I don't know what your consent decree is, but I'm rather angry that in our state people can pretend to be a registrant and have registrants. Both Mr. Ron Garrett, who is a registered civil engineer in this state, and then Mr. I think it's Ken O'Dell, a registrant as an architect and for a time was a registrant for a firm, to aid and abet this gentleman to pretend to be an architect, to take work away from registered architects, and go on and be able to have a contract with a town to do their work. So,
okay, if I may interrupt you for a minute.
That's my added complaint.
We want to focus on the synopsis of this complaint in front of us, which I'll read the synopsis in a minute. If you have a complaint against an aiding and abetting registrant, have you filled out a complaint form against that person?
That was my original form. I complained about both of them. I did not know at the time that he was going to re-register and try and aid and abet Mr. Loss. That's new.
Okay. So, focusing on just this, taking this thing apart and doing this, what we've got in front of us, on June 5th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and respondent firm advertised the practice of architecture on a website in a telephone directory without firm registration to the board. It is further alleged that the respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of architecture without firm registration on the Town of Payson Library Project, Town of Payson Concession Stand Project, Community Presbyterian Preschool Project, all in the Town of Payson, Arizona. The board record shows no indication a respondent firm has ever been registered with the board.
That's correct.
So that is the complaint we're looking at right now.
So I need to make a further complaint then.
We may be able to open one here at this table. I'll have to verify that. But I want to focus on what we've got in front of us. So what I'm going to do now is open it up for discussion from the board.
Bob, you know that, you know Mr. Long has signed the consent agreement. He's admitted to this.
I have no idea what consent agreement means.
So, Jason, if you could, or Jake, either of you could explain that.
The consent agreement is the result of the investigation, and it's orders any penalties or fines and discipline on the registrant. In this case, the registrant consented to the following discipline: civil penalty of $1,500, cost of investigation of $224, and obeyo laws. That's a quick summary of the consent agreement. And he had signed that. He agreed to that.
Can I respond to that?
Please do.
He signed and said he was going to obey the laws. He did not obey the law when he got fed back to Mr. Odell, got him to re-register as a firm, and is claiming that they are now, he's a principal in the firm and is going to in some manner supervise his work. And as I read this law, it clearly says that an architect who's a registrant should not aid and abet a non-registrant to bypass the laws of this state. And that's what he's doing.
Okay.
That's, and the registrant is disobeying that law.
That's a separate issue right now in front of us.
But Long is disobeying that by going to this registrant and getting him to aid and abet him in avoiding the law.
Thank you. So we have in front of us a consent agreement. It's signed. I'm going to open this up to the board for discussion here. And I'm going to start the discussion off with the original complaint lists several public works projects. And one might be small. The other ones seem to be big just by their names. So maybe I'm incorrect or making assumptions. But the Town of Payson Library Project, the concession stand, I don't know how big a concession stand is, Community Presbyterian Preschool Project, all in the Town of Payson. So we have these public works projects. I guess what strikes me is the civil penalty seems low. I don't know what the Town of Payson is doing or thinking or how they arrived at this point, but it seems like there's some problems there, that there's a disconnect between what the town understands and what we understand here at the board.
Just as an aside, my observation is that the consent really focuses on advertising without a license. Is that really the issue that the board members see in this case, or is this more serious, more egregious?
The complaint talks about the advertising and working on the projects. Well, I guess part of my concern is the respondent says, sorry about that, I work with this other guy who is a registrant, and he's renewed. But we still have this Long Design Associates LLC, architects and designers, that apparently has never been registered, and there's nothing in this consent agreement that requires him to register the firm. So it's what you had to say, Jason, and...
No, normally one would expect a cease and desist on the firm that's practicing without registration. And so if Long Design Associates is in fact performing architectural services without registration or license, we ought to at least address them to cease and desist.
Well, we can't issue a cease and desist, and we don't do... What's the other one we used to do that we don't do anymore? Assurance of discontinuance. For some reason, we don't do that anymore. So now we just have this obey all laws catch-all for everything. So technically, if he signs it and we agree to it, obey all laws means, okay, he has to obey all laws, which I think is stupid too, because if he gets a parking ticket, he's broken the law. So what, are we going to open up a new case that he failed on his... This is just my rant on this.
I think staff has to
put it all.
Yes, on the plans for all those public works projects, the only one that was sealed was the library. The other projects, I obtained them through a print shop where they were having them duplicated, but they were clearly marked preliminary, not for construction. So the only project that was worked on was the library stuff. With that library project, the architect, Mr. Ken O'Dell, who has been a registered architect with the board for many years, attended meetings during the drawing phase, draft phase of all of it, with the library staff. So that's how we came to the conclusion. It wasn't just a simple rubber stamp. He was actually there.
Are you saying that the drawings, without a seal, and they built the project, Bob?
No.
I mean, how do you not get a building permit without?
No. The only one that did have a seal was that library project.
What about the other two?
The other, I think there were three actually. The other projects were never built. They were never worked on. They were in a very preliminary phase, and I caught the duplicates as they were being printed at a print shop at the base. But they were very clearly marked not for construction, preliminary use only.
I'm a little bit. I don't even know if uneasy is the right word, but duplicates from a print shop, I mean, it's a source, it's something to look at, but I'm not really going to hang a heavy hat on that, whatever decision we come to from those draw. I don't know that they're authoritative coming from a print shop. So I'm a little, it's probably a good tool for us to look at, but I don't want to necessarily put a lot of weight in that, knowing that that's the source of those documents, unless they were authoritatively released somehow. So, Mr. Hershberger.
I have heard from one of the people at the preschool, one of the owners at the preschool, the Presbyterian Church, that they have engaged Mr. Long to do their work. I've heard from board members that they have engaged Mr. Long, board members of the library board, that they have engaged Mr. Long to do the work. I have heard, but don't have any direct, all secondhand, that Mr. Long has made arrangements with Mr. O'Dell to serve as the architect for these projects. I don't know what their agreement is in that regard, whether or not he is going to actually be in the office. I'm 83, he's 83, he was previously retired, I'm retired. I don't know whether or not he actually intends to be in the firm and watching and making sure that all of the things that he passed his registration exam for are being done by a non-registrant who's never taken a registration exam, never gotten a degree in architecture and the like. So I'm not content with him just signing off and taking work away from legitimate architects and getting away with it. I think that's a blemish on all of our professions. And so I'm not satisfied with just giving him a slap on the hand and saying, pat on the butt, you can take away jobs from people. All you got to do is get this guy to sign on with you, and you can be the architect of record.
So as far as we know, listen, Patty, Long Design Associates, LLC, is still operating today with Ken O'Dell as architect of record for this office, but the firm itself is not registered with the board. Is that correct?
It seems like.
The firm is registered. He did register during the investigation process.
He registered the firm,
correct.
Not just, oh, okay.
That was,
yeah, I misunderstood that.
Registered through the entire period as an architect, but he let his firm registration lapse when he retired, and as soon as he retired, apparently Shannon Long decided he was an architect and represented itself as an architect for several years.
I understand that, but now that their company is registered with the board legally, right now.
At least Ken O'Dell's company is.
No, what about Long's company?
Long Design Associates is registered.
Is registered, okay.
And O'Dell is the principal?
So
no,
you can have a non-registrant on
no,
a firm,
Mr. Long,
it's like, and you have a registrant that's supervising the drawing, so
yes.
It's okay.
And you know, they, I mean, we have two
principal,
Mr. Foose is right. We have two things here. This is practicing architecture and not having a registered firm. That's what this case is.
If
this Odell is aiding and abetting, that's right. A case against Odell,
right.
Not a case against Long.
I agree.
So,
I understand that.
Yeah.
But how is he aiding and abetting when he's with a firm registration?
Right. Well, it goes back to money flow and things like that. I mean, is he just rubber stamping it, or is he actually doing the work? Is he actually an employee of the firm? Or is he just...
I think so.
Well, we don't know. I mean...
He's listed as principal, apparently.
Okay.
Principal architect.
Bob, do you know... Are they in the same office together? Do you know that?
I don't know where they're practicing from.
Okay.
So, I mean, this case is this case, and if there's...
Yeah, yeah.
If there needs to be another case, that's another case.
Do we feel, going back to your first point, Jason, do we think the civil penalty's low?
Well, it's, I mean,
okay.
From what we have and what we know, I mean, besides the alleger's talking to boards, you know, we have a set of drawings that is stamped by the only one that, and we have a bunch of preliminary ones that haven't done anything. So, at this point in time, I mean, I think, you know, we have one, and really it's more the firm and, you know, practicing architecture. I mean,
which he signed that consent. So
right.
I'm okay with this the way it is. Do you think we need to send a letter to the town of Payson of some sort?
Saying what? Follow the law? I mean,
employ the firm's registered.
For public works.
Just make sure your firms are registered and you have registrants doing the work.
I'd be careful about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be careful about that.
Yeah, I think that's their, I mean...
Okay.
They're the government, too. They should follow the laws and take care of it themselves.
But I think this really comes back to a fine for false advertisement. At the time that Long Associates was soliciting work, they were not registered. They had themselves in a telephone directory and a website as practicing architecture. And for that misrepresentation, we're fining them and citing them in this consent agreement.
Right. Which is so, why I think the consent agreement that's there is for this case good. If other things come up later on, that's a different story. But I mean, just on this one thing and the evidence we have right now.
Understand that, Bob?
I will entertain a motion to that effect if anybody's willing.
Yeah, well, I'll make a motion to accept signed consent agreement for $1,500 civil cost of investigation issue 24 and the obey all laws.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to accept the signed consent agreement. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. I think that we need to open up an investigation against, and help me out with the name of the party that we're interested in here.
Ken Odell.
So I think we should direct staff to open up an investigation on Ken Odell for aiding and abetting. Is there anything else on this item?
Larry, do you want to sign in it? You okay?
I can say something.
Sure. That's a good guy.
I think he's here for this one.
That's the guy.
State your name, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. My name is Larry Enyard, FAIA. I'm the original architect for the Payson Library. We entered into an agreement back in 1996, and the building is about 21 years old. We were hired recently to look at the opportunity to expand it. We had done master planning in the years 2003, 2006, and now 2019. We worked very closely with the large group of the Friends of the Library to get all the ingredients of what they wanted to build in the library and put them in. We were asked to do a cost estimate of the project, The good news is they have money left over from our first endeavor, because we helped them raise money in the years 1996, 97, and so on. So anyway, we helped, you know, produce documents that they could use for fundraising, and they were going to get another donation of 100K and so on. So it didn't sound like a big deal. That we were almost there. But we had some deferred maintenance to do on that building, 20 years old, and certain things, so we put it in the budget. And then, lo and behold, I called the library director, Emily Leakey, and she told me they had hired an architect named Shannon Long, and that they were going to go ahead with that. So that was kind of disappointing. So I called the library friend's chair lady, Linda Lancott, and asked if that was true, that they were hired this other architect, and they said yes, they were going to move on. But I had 3 days if I wanted to do another cost estimate and design to bring it in. They would consider it. But prior to that, I'd actually looked at Shannon Long up on the internet, and he was an architect, he said. And I said to Linda, you may have a problem here with the registration of the firm in question. And further, does that firm carry E&O insurance? Errors and omissions. Big thing on public work, isn't it? But no one asked the question. So anyway, my warning was not hostile, but I was kind of shocked by all of this. And it seems to me that if you look at this principle of having a principal as a firm member, what are they going to work for the year? 2 hours? 20 hours? 200 hours? Or 2,080 hours as a work year? Because you could sign up with five or six architects that want to be architects and be the principal and spread yourself out. It seems to me if you move forward on this, there should be some constraints of what a principal can do, meaning you got to work a certain amount of time and be accountable for all things in that building, not just ceiling plans. So we were kind of flabbergasted how this went. But I've always had a good relationship in Payson, and the building they like a lot and have said so publicly, and we just are befuddled by all of this. But it seems like they're getting off very light. And I think further consideration should be given to what a principal really is and the time spent doing it. I would recommend that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anything else?
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Larry.
So, we've accepted the consent agreement. We've opened up an investigation against Odell. We've heard some concerns from the public regarding the whole deal. Investigation, have you noted those? Okay, so we have those noted. Is there anything else that we have to talk about on this case today?
No.
Is there anybody else in the audience to speak on this case? Okay, hearing nothing from anybody, I am going to close the case. And we will move on to our formal hearings, 5A.
Is this Ray here?
Is he out of state somewhere?
Hi, this is Brad.
Hello, this is Mr. Dixon.
Yes.
This is Kurt Winter here at the Arizona Board of Technical Registration Board meeting. We're about to go over your formal administrative hearing, and we'd like to know if you have the time to listen in and speak with the board.
Yes, I do.
Very good. You are now in the board meeting.
Yes.
Okay, we have case number P-17-056, Bradley T. Dixon, engineer, number 36637. And this case was originally, I believe, a motion to deem, but we've ended up with a consent agreement. And I believe that's signed. Is that correct, Mr. Winter?
Yes, so we received a signed consent agreement yesterday.
We have a consent agreement. I'm going to turn the floor over to Ms. Ray of the State of Arizona.
I think Mr. Dixon is available to tell you what his feelings are about this, but in this case, Mr. Dixon admits that he did something wrong, but that it was an inadvertent mistake, and I recommend that you accept the consent agreement.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. Mr. Dixon, do you have anything to add to that?
It is correct that I did something against the board's rules, but I will say that it was a mistake on my part. It was not an intentional infraction of the rules, but in the end, the result was that I did break the board's rules, and I understand that.
Thank you, Mr. Dixon. So we have a signed consent agreement in front of us. I believe the action would be for the board to accept that. Before we move ahead with that, though, I have to ask our counsel, do we need to do anything with the previous deem?
We would move to withdraw that.
So I'd be looking for a motion to withdraw the previous deem.
Well, before we do, I have a question on just, this is a 17 case, so it probably happened in, well, it's early 17, so it probably happened in 17, right?
Yes.
Why is it taken 2 years? I mean, what happened? I mean, kind of, what's the timeline on this? I mean, this obviously had to come before the board or something before, right?
It did. The board voted to offer a consent agreement very similar to the one that's before you. And if it wasn't accepted, then the case was sent to formal hearing, and it wasn't accepted. So the case went into the formal hearing queue. And as you know, we've had some difficulties with AG resources. So the case has now been picked up and is before you for consideration today.
Okay.
Okay.
So when this... We offered the consent agreement. It was on the board agenda at that time.
Right.
Mr. Dixon, I'm just curious, why didn't you not respond to this 2 years ago when it first came up?
Yeah, honestly, that was a mistake on my part. In the end, I think I misunderstood the process that was occurring at that time, and so I didn't take that action, even though I had talked to, I believe it was Sean Thacker, at the time, and he and I had talked through that agreement, but I think I just did not understand the process thoroughly, so didn't end up accepting that consent agreement at the time.
Okay, thanks.
Ms. Ray and I met with Mr. Dixon by phone and discussed this case and the consent agreement with him. So.
Okay, I just wondered why 2 years down the road, but okay.
Yes. Yes.
That explains it.
We are trying to clear up our backlog of formal hearing cases.
Okay. So what do we need to do? Make a motion to withdraw the deem?
No, I think I'll move that we accept the state's withdrawal of the motion to deem and accept the signed consent agreement.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing or seeing none, I'll call for the question. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Dixon.
Thank you, Ms. Ray.
Thank you.
We'll see you in a minute.
Happy day.
You too.
Okay, so. And thank you, Mr. Everode. Okay, we will move on to case 5B1, which is AL-17017. And this is a similar case where we have a signed consent agreement in lieu of a motion to deem. Do we have anybody here on this case?
Why is this one?
I was under the impression that they were going to call in. Is that not true?
I can let these give you information regarding that.
Okay, maybe not.
Okay, so we have nobody here. We will start case AL-17017 with comments from the state. Ms. Ray?
Thank you. This involves an alarm business that's really headquartered in New York. And they ventured into Arizona and then found out that was not the right thing to do without a license. And they pulled out of Arizona, and when we sent them the notice of hearing, the owner's attorney contacted me and said, we'd really like to resolve this. I don't know why it wasn't resolved earlier, other than maybe because they're out of state, there was some difficulty in contacting them. But essentially the consent agreement is identical, if I remember correctly, to the one that was originally approved by the board. I recommend that you accept it. The company no longer has any interest in practicing in the state of Arizona, from my understanding.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. Members of the board, can we get a motion out of that, or do we have any discussion, concerns?
Mr. Chair, I move that we accept the signed consent agreement in lieu of hearing. Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Ray.
684 now.
Thanks.
684. People are waiting.
I've got a list here. Up next on the list, we have item 6D7. And Mr. Bale, I believe it is signed up to speak.
Mr. Baker.
Baker, I'm sorry. This is 6D7.
Did you call Baker?
Yes.
Okay, in front of us we have case number, excuse me, sir. We have case number P18-051. The respondent is George Baker, registered architect. Synopsis of the complaint is the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent's project submittals were substandard and required more reviews as compared to the technical knowledge and skill of other qualified registrants who practice the same profession and submit plans to the Lake Havasu City. Some submittals from the respondent have led to code coordination issues during the permitting construction process. Lake Havasu City previously attempted to contact the respondent with no success, despite the fact that submittals indicate that he has a local Lake Havasu City office and phone number. It is further alleged that the respondent firm has engaged in the practice of architecture without firm registration since April 30th, 2009. The summary of the investigation and staff recommendation is accept respondent's signed consent agreement encompassing the following order: voluntary surrender and voluntary surrender of firm registration card. And I do believe this is a signed consent. Is that correct, Mr. Baker?
Right.
Okay. Okay, I'll open the floor up to you, Mr. Baker.
Well, I just wanted to thank the board for time and consideration. But I know this is taking a little time, so just thank you for your time. I'd love to know that.
Thank you for your comments. I'll open the item up to the floor for discussion or possible motion.
Chair, I'll move that we accept the consent agreement.
I have a question.
Yep.
I'll second it in discussion.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Jones.
Mr. Baker, the young man in Lake Havasu City, is he still practicing as a draftsman there?
Speak up a little bit, I can't.
He's asking about Mr. Reese. He's still practicing.
He couldn't make it today. He's sick, but he's an excellent draftsman. And I've worked with him for like 20 years. And in fact, not now, but back when this project was done, he was my only draftsman at the time.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion, questions, concerns? Hearing nothing, I'll call for the question. All in favor of the motion to dismiss?
Accept
the signed consent. Sorry. Please restate the ayes.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hunt. Okay, the next item we have Tom Hawes, item 6C3.
Chair, I ask the board to possibly supplement the list a bit. We have Dini Ray here additionally regarding E3, Carlos Padilla.
Oh, sure. 6E. We will move to 6E3. Give me a second to get caught up here. 6E3. Okay, 6E3 is case number P20002. The respondent is Carlos Padilla, non-registrant. Synopsis of the complaint is on July 12, 2019. The board received a complaint alleging that the respondent and respondent firm engaged in the practice of land surveying in Queen Creek, Arizona, and was paid $750 by a client to identify the property boundary and easements on or about June 10, 2019. The investigative conclusion concludes that the respondent has violated board statute ARS 32145. Number one, in that the respondent practiced a board-regulated profession without board registration. Also, ARS 32141, in that respondent firm practiced and offered to practice a board-regulated profession without firm registration. The staff recommendation is that the board forward this case directly to hearing. Knowing that, now we will hear from Ms. Ray of the state.
Thanks. Chairman, this is an unusual situation because Mr. Padilla has a long history of violations with the board, and we have two pending new matters. This is one of them. This is the most recent one, if I remember correctly. It's my recommendation that we submit these cases to the county attorney's offices, both Pima and I think it's be Pima and Maricopa County for criminal prosecution, and I'm looking for your support in that. And so what we're asking for is that you approve that effort. I can't guarantee that it'll be successful, but I would like to try and do that because I think this gentleman has passed the administrative stage and is now in a stage where he needs to be treated differently.
And Mr. Chair, if I may add to that, the board does presently have an injunction against Mr. Padilla to try to prevent this type of behavior. Mr. Padilla, the one limitation on an injunction is you have to accomplish personal service in order to be able to find someone in violation of that injunction for contempt of court. Mr. Padilla has been expert at ducking service on it. We've been unable to serve him with this injunction to date, and a criminal referral may be the only means of accomplishing.
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Director.
Oh, Ms. Ray, I just had a question. Do you feel that separate counties attorney are the best criminal prosecution or the AG?
Well, I did speak with Paul Ayler at the Attorney General's office, and he said that they generally don't handle misdemeanors.
Okay.
He he is giving me the name of a contact at Pima County, and I have a contact in Maricopa County. So the effort would be to contact those individuals and explain the situation to them and hope that they would undertake this, you know, this prosecution. I do state with caution, though, that the board staff will have to do the investigation to submit to them. We'll have to give them the complete investigation. But one of the advantages of criminal prosecution, if you can call it that, is that if Mr. Padilla is not able to be contacted by summons, a warrant will issue for his arrest. And that's a lot harder to avoid, because if he gets stopped for a traffic ticket or whatever, he's going to get into the system. At this point, we haven't been able to bring him into the system because he avoids service.
Thank you, Ms. Ray. I guess I'll put on the daddy pants and make the motion. I move that we authorize Ms. Ray to move this to the county attorney's, through the county attorney's offices.
Second.
As suggested. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes. Thank you, Ms. Rice.
Thank you.
Okay. We are done with the state items. We will move on to the next item on the list, which is 6C3, Tom Haas.
6D.
6C3. I can't hear you. I need hearing aids. Okay, we are on agenda item 6C3, case number P19054. The respondent is Thomas Haas, PE Civil. Synopsis of the complaint is, on April 7th, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the respondent engaged in the unlicensed practice of land surveying on non-incidental project for which he was not qualified to perform. It was further alleged that the respondent's survey for the minor land division project at Cortez Road in Apache Junction, Arizona, demonstrated a lack of appropriate technical knowledge and skill and failed to meet the Arizona boundary survey minimum standards, and that the respondent failed to monument boundary corners and identify accepted monuments as specified in the Arizona boundary survey minimum standards, item number 8, and failed to show basis of bearing, statement of supervision, a legend, and reference documents on his survey as specified in Arizona boundary survey minimum standards number 11. It was also alleged that the respondent recorded a survey without obtaining approval by the appropriate Pinal County agency. The investigation resulted in the staff recommendation of a letter of reprimand, assurance of discontinuance, administrative penalty in the amount of $2,000, cost of investigation in $338, and this is 63. We are moving to offer. Do we have a signed consent this one?
He signed the consent agreement.
Okay, so we do have a signed consent in front of us on this. I will open up the floor to Mr. Haas if you have anything you'd like to offer the board.
I only signed in case the board has questions.
Okay, thank you. Board, does the board have any questions with anything?
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to offer, maybe an opinion, but if Mr. Haas was in fact unqualified to perform land surveying and did not meet the minimum competency required by a registered land surveyor, and yet he recorded his document with the Pinal County, I would suspect that that document needs to be rescinded and refiled by a licensed land surveyor and consider it null and void.
I don't know how to approach that. I really honestly don't. I see the logic and the value of the logic, but once something's recorded, it's very hard for us to wave a wand and just make it disappear. I think, I don't know when this was exactly recorded, Do you recall, Mr. Hawes, when you recorded this?
Mr. Hawes actually did do the recording. It was the owner of the property that took it and signed his name.
Do you recall approximately when that was?
August 2014.
So we've got 5 years of people potentially relying on this thing. And I don't, that's a whole different road from what this board needs to go down or probably is even authorized to go down. So I don't know what we do. I mean, I kind of always fall back on let the sleeping dogs lie. If the people are made aware of this, they always have the choice of whether or not to accept that survey. So, but I don't, Gene, I honestly don't know what the action is. I wish I had a simple one that, a big rubber stamp down at the recorder's office that said no good.
And this has came up before, and the same, we've talked about it before. There's really nothing you can do about it.
Question, if we record this decision, the fact there was a question on the performance of that survey, that gets recorded, Tower Report will pick it up on a purchase.
This decision won't get recorded.
Can we record it, though? So that someone buying realizes there's potentially an issue.
Well, at least could we notify Pinal County Planning and Development that the board has basically rescinded the land surveying aspect of citing monuments and other boundary decisions made by an unlicensed land surveyor. I don't know. It just seems to me, if it's to protect the public for errors and omissions, if you would, by a document that's light, that's sealed, this is the case.
Yeah. And I think staff could send a letter to Pinal County Recorder's Office. Just basically the same thing would be available to the public. Is that possible, Patty?
Yes.
Just saying that here's the case, here's the evidence, and right. They can do what they want to.
What they want to, but at least
it's up to them.
We've informed them of our concern.
And I'll tell you how this lays out in, plays out in Mojave County. What happens is if a registrant goes, a registrant or non-registrant, somehow files a minor land division in the recorder's office, if the recorder's office doesn't catch it and it gets recorded, the owners take this over to the building department to get a building permit. And that's the place where they say, hey, the reviewing agency didn't sign this. Nobody signed this. This isn't authoritative. It doesn't meet our standards. Now, I don't know what the standards are in Pinal County, but I'm just using that example in Mojave County where the building department will look at this document and say it's not authoritative because it doesn't have the appropriate signatures on it.
Mr. Chairman, I just don't want a boundary dispute to occur downstream and the board to be an accomplice to it. That's all.
I'll be an accomplice.
By accepting this survey and not citing it.
Well, we didn't accept the survey.
Yeah, we're not.
Pinal County accepted the survey. Okay. That's why if we send them a letter, then they can decide if they want to pull it or keep it or have someone else do it. Or it's up to them. I mean, that's not our purview to.
Okay.
I mean, we're not telling them to pull the survey or nothing. That's not our job.
Yeah, and ultimately the owners, I mean, they have some authority here. It's their property, so. And we don't know what shakes out on the ground out there and what they've accepted as as boundaries. So it's really a tough thing to undo, unfortunately. But I agree with and appreciate the sentiment. I wish there was a mechanism for us to do that.
And I think we're going to do the best thing we can do as the board. Send a letter, tell them here's the issue, do what you want to with it. I mean, that drops in their lap. Then.
There's nothing that prohibits the respondent from taking an action on his own either, if he was so compelled to do something to identify this case somehow.
But it's not in the consent agreement.
No, it's not. But that would be on him.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to accept the signed consent agreement.
It's not. Signed.
For
it was just
for P-1954.
I'll second that, Chair.
Okay, we have a motion and a second, and I just need to offer a little commentary here as the representative of the minor land division process in the whole state, I guess, here. It's such an important process because our land is developed in Arizona through large subdivisions that are heavily regulated. The county's got their mitts in that. And then we have this small project-based thing that's really for the benefit of the owners. And it's so important for our registrants to recognize these processes within each county and each jurisdiction. And that's really the thing that enables the public to easily subdivide small pieces of land. So I think this case just highlights some of the things that can go a little bit awry out there on the ground. So that's my unsolicited commentary for the day. With that, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Hawes.
Are we sending a letter?
Yes. Direct staff to send a letter to Pinal County. Recorder's office regarding the case.
I would send it to their planning department as well.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gene. Okay, that concludes 6C3. Up next we have two parties to speak on 6A4. The first one signed up is Matt Olson. And the second is Holly Wagner. Are you together? Are you both complaining or?
Both complaining.
Okay, both of you come up then. You're on the same side. Okay, this is 6A4, so let me cue this up here real quick. Item 6A4 is case number P19-059. Respondent is Paul Basha, PE. Synopsis of the complaint. On May 12, 2019, board received a complaint alleging that the respondent failed to follow generally accepted engineering standards and procedures, overestimated daily trip numbers, and used inaccurate traffic data while preparing a traffic control studies for the intersections of 118th Street and Rio Verde Drive and 122nd Street and Rio Verde Drive in Scottsdale, Arizona during June and July of 2018. It is further alleged that the respondent failed to sign and seal either of the traffic control studies he prepared. The result of that investigation, staff recommends that the case be dismissed. I will read the investigative conclusions. The investigation concludes that the respondent has not violated the board statutes. Respondent did admit that he did not sign and seal traffic study reports. However, respondent had previously received a letter of concern addressing this issue in the March 27, 2019 case P19-024. The board issued a letter of concern to remind the respondent to be aware of sealing requirement pursuant to the Arizona Administrative Code, which requires the registrant to sign and seal any letter or other professional document prepared by the registrant or bona fide employee. Again, the staff recommends that the case be dismissed. So I will open up the floor to Mr. Olson first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little bit about this. These are roundabouts that are up on Dynamite and 122nd, 118. Middle of last year, 2018, it became public that they were putting in roundabouts. And for us, putting roundabouts on that road, it's like putting them in the middle of the B-line, the highway. I mean, there was just no justification on our part that they belong there. And so I went back and forth with Mr. Bash, and he provided me those reports. And just on the face of the reports, there's just tons of problems with them. You know, within 5 minutes of pulling stuff up on the internet, he's got the traffic. He says that this year the traffic volume on Rio Verde Drive is at 18,500 trips a day. When you can pull up on just Maricopa Association of Governments, you can pull up trip studies on the Scottsdale website. They're only around 10,500, 11,000. So we overestimated the sucker to justify these intersections and the roundabouts. Just the traffic on Rio Verde alone, be overestimated by at least 7,500 cars a day. And then you get into the trips that go into the golf course. It's the most exclusive golf course probably in the country. There's only about 30 rounds of golf that go off there a day. And somehow he comes up with the number that there's 1,300 trips in there a day. And it's just ridiculous. And then the other roundabout goes to the developer's home. And it's not even complete. And he went down to Alma School Road, which is about a mile down the road, and split the traffic. There was 10,000 cars going up and down Alma School, which is commercial. It's got high-density residential. He took, for his traffic study, he took half the cars off Alma School and put them on a two-lane, 30-mile-an-hour road to justify his signal warrant for that roundabout. Okay. I went back and forth with him. I called him on it. The studies were, you know, technically flawed. And they were bogus, as I felt. I gave up. You know, I don't think I can find a billionaire and the head of the Scottsdale Transportation Department. And I figured that, okay, he's overestimated it by 7,500 to 8,000 cars a day. They'll at least build these roundabouts, you know, overbuild them, so we're not going to have trouble getting by them. So fast forward about 8 months from there, I'm sitting in a line every morning, you know, in the winter, there's a lot more traffic out there. So I'm sitting in a line every morning waiting 5 minutes to drive through this obstacle course that shouldn't be there. And so I submit a records request to the city of Scottsdale to find out, you know, what these traffic, what these roundabouts, what they were designed for, what the capacity of them, you know, is. And I get a letter back from the city of Scottsdale saying from, it didn't have Mr. Bash's name on it, but it was written by Mr. Bash. And he tells me that it's not a federal highway, so we don't have to do those studies. So they put, I mean, engineering 101, they put a traffic control device in the middle of the road and never figured out.
I need to interrupt you for a minute, Mr. Olson. Are you an engineer?
Yeah. I want a PE.
Okay.
I do have an engineering degree also.
Okay. You made the reference to Engineering 101, and I'm thinking I wouldn't even know what that is. I'm not an engineer.
I've held all the different contractor's licenses also. I've done a lot of things. But where was I? So I submit the records request. I find out that, you know, first off, Mr. Bash is totally involved in this project. You know, every single, so I submit the record request, find out that they don't do, you know, it's required by the Scottsdale policies, design manual and all that stuff to do like Rodel modeling, you know, to determine, you know, the amount of traffic the roundabout can take with the least amount of delay, you know, at peak times, and they didn't do any of that. And so then I made my records request a little more broad, and I got all these documents, and so then I figured out that that Mr. Basher had been doing all these backroom dealings with the developer behind the scenes since 2017, that after, in mid-2018, when it became public that that these roundabouts were going in, that the roundabouts had already been designed. And so when the public got all upset about it, Mr. Bashett did these reports after the fact. And I found out that
Who designed the roundabouts?
It was a firm that Bob Parsons Group hired. I'm not sure.
Were they licensed?
Yeah, they were licensed.
Okay. So that there was a design done properly under the right authority and so on and so forth?
Yes. I mean, they did plans, and they just didn't follow the way that roundabouts would typically be constructed. So I find out that, you know, this is all done behind. All the, had the meetings with the county officials, with the transportation department, everybody was against these roundabouts. They didn't belong there. They were inappropriate. And but Mr. Bash did not back down. Now it comes to light, okay, these were already designed when he's had these meetings with us. He can't back down. And he had, then I found that there's two traffic studies for that exact intersection. And neither of them, one was from 2010, from Lyle Anderson when he was putting houses around the golf course there, Scottsdale National. And then one in City of Scottsdale required another traffic study to be done in 2015 by Scottsdale National. Neither of those reports recommended any type of traffic control devices at those intersections. It was just turn lanes. I found out through the records request the guys designing the roundabouts were working off of the documentation that no traffic control devices were required for those intersections. Mr. Basha, on these reports, I feel use them as props to mislead the county officials, the residents. Everything is just totally overblown in them. According to the Scottsdale National one, they play 50 rounds of golf a day there. And somehow he bumped up his trips into the club at up to 1,300. The place only has 150 members or something like that. They're going to max out at 350. There's no possible way that his numbers are correct.
Do you have any insight to the future?
They capped it at 350. They're going to cap it at 350.
Okay.
So, and it's invite only. There's no public that can go in there. I actually haven't seen, I drive that road 3 or 4 times a day. I haven't seen a car go in there in 2 months.
I mean, are they planning events in the next 20 years? Is Wide World of Sports going to show up one day, or ESPN? Or?
If they did, it would be a total nightmare for us because it's a single-lane roundabout. It would back up traffic for miles. I mean, it's just not designed for that. It's not like a stoplight where it stops or like this. It's kind of stuck there. But, True North is right down the street a mile. They play 70,000 rounds a year, 325 rounds a day, where Scottsdale National, right now they're probably playing 20 or 30 rounds a day. And
none of those 70,000 people use that road? It's right down the road, right?
Well, that's where he went and took his numbers for the traffic studies.
Okay, I see.
He took, instead of, he's got two prior reports for the exact same intersection. And instead, because he couldn't make the numbers, I believe, he couldn't make the numbers work to justify the roundabouts, and he had already approved the roundabouts at these intersections, that he couldn't go back on them. And so he went and down the street to Alma School and Rio Verde or Dynamite, and he pulled those numbers, which are much more higher because True is down there. There's lots of commercial, it's high density residential. There's a difference, down the road it's probably 13,000 vehicles a day to the 10,000 that are up there. I mean, there's a significant difference between the two. But, he used his PE to mislead the public. That's my complaint.
Ms. Wagner, would you like to add to that?
Yes, I would. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, of the board, and thank you for your time and consideration. I'm going to have to ask all of you to reconsider the dismissal of this case. I believe these traffic studies are substandard, and we can't ignore the time and the creation of these traffic reports after the approved design. There are 4 studies that are known that we can go ahead and look at. The first one is a 2010 reserve traffic study done by Lyle Anderson Developers. We know that Lyle Anderson Development created Desert Mountain and Desert Highlands. In that 2010 traffic study, only turn lanes were suggested to be sufficient. And the second one is a 2015 study done by Scottsdale National. That traffic study also did not warrant roundabouts, only turn lanes, and no control traffic devices. The 2 outlier traffic studies that we can go ahead and look at are both of those produced by Paul Basha. The first one I'm going to speak about is the one on 122nd and Rio Verde Drive. This is to the entrance of Scottsdale National Golf Course. This is where the number came of an estimated 1,333 trips per day through that entrance. The number is impossible. It's a private member-only club. The membership is currently at 150 members, and it is capped at 350. They only do 30 rounds of golf per day, not 50 as stated in the report. They have two 18-hole golf courses and one 9-hole golf course. They've never had 50 rounds go off at one time, as stated in the 2014 report that's done by Paul Vasher. The second study conducted by Paul Vasher was on 118th Street, where the numbers were not taken from that specific location, but rather from Alma School. He cut those numbers in half, stating the other half of the traffic would be utilizing 118th Street. This does not happen. These traffic studies are overestimated by 41%, 7,500 vehicle passes per day. The numbers are just not from the current location. You can't ignore the fact of when these traffic studies were produced, which were after the fact and after the design. There is currently also no detour route for emergency services. Currently, we have not been able to locate any single lane roundabouts here in the state of Arizona, let alone two consecutive roundabouts in the same street. So this is the first time that this has been done. Like I said, all been done after the fact. I really believe that the board takes a further investigation into this study. I'm requesting disciplinary action from the board and to open up separate complaints for lack of detour routes. That's about it, board. I wish you would all move forward in further investigation, not to dismiss this.
Thank you, Ms. Wagner. I'm going to open this up for the board for discussion and questions to the alleger's here or complainers.
Chairman, the respondent is here to speak.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. Please come on up, Mr. Basher. I did not see you on my list. I apologize. You're on page 2. My bad. Thank you for coming, Mr. Basher. State your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the board. My name is Paul Basher. I'm Transportation Director for the Citizens of Scottsdale. Everything you just heard from these two individuals was included in the complaint filed with the board. Everything you just heard was included in the assessment that you directed be accomplished by two independent professional engineers. Both of those engineers recommended dismissal of the allegations. I responded to all of those allegations you just heard in a report that I filed with the board that was also reviewed by the two independent assessors appointed by the board. Everything I did was in complete conformance with professional standards, completely in conformance with practice and responsibility and requirements of my license as a professional civil engineer. I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Who was your client?
I did not have a client.
Wasn't the city of Scottsdale?
It was my work as an employee with the city of Scottsdale.
He works with the transportation department for the city of Scottsdale. I agree with Mr. Basha. I mean, we had two EAC members. We'd go through all of the documentation and review it. And both of them didn't even recommend having an EAC and said they were unwarranted. So, I mean, overestimating traffic numbers and stuff, I mean, that's kind of an engineer's prerogative. I mean, you can be conservative, or if you want to be, or not. You're also designing for future load, potentially.
I'm a little disturbed about the sequencing according to the alleger's. I would think that the traffic studies would come before the design, the initial design, by the outside consultant. but apparently that didn't happen. Mr. Basser, please.
If I may respond to that, Chair. First off, the City of Scottsdale City Council adopted Transportation Master Plan requires the installation of roundabouts at all intersections. That policy was adopted in July of 2016. No reports were necessary, no analysis was necessary for these two roundabouts. The City Council mandated Transportation Master Plan policies already required those two roundabouts to be installed. I elected by myself to do those two studies in coordination and in association with two other individuals in the Transportation Department. One who was a professional engineer, one who was an engineer in training at the time and is now a professional engineer. We accomplished those two studies essentially at the request of the Maricopa County Department of Transportation, and it was after the fact. But again, the City Council had already determined that those two intersections should be roundabouts.
Chair, question. Mr. Bashwood, does your study allow for a second lane? Because right now there's apparently some concern about congestion on a single lane roundabout. Is there a threshold when you might consider a second lane to avoid congestion?
Chair, members of the board, we did discuss the potential need for a second lane sometime in the future. We did discuss that with the engineering design firm of record. And our decision at the time was the single lane roundabout would be very adequate far into the future. The Dynamite Boulevard, also called Rail Guardy Drive, is one lane per direction for most of its length. There are no plans to widen Rail Guardy Drive to two lanes per direction for the next 20 years.
Thank you.
So we believe that the single lane roundabout will be very sufficient far into the future.
Thank you.
And Mr. Bashwood, the design was done by an outside consultant registered in Arizona. Is that correct?
That is correct. The design firm was Wood Patel, and they used a Mark T. Johnson, who is a roundabout design expert from the state of Wisconsin, to assist with that design. The plans are stamped and signed by Wood Patel.
Any other questions for Mr. Basher?
Can I follow up on that?
We both.
In regards to the roundabouts and if they're expandable or anything, they are not expandable. They designed the roundabouts to the size of the right-of-way. They're one of the roundabouts on 122nd takes up the whole entire street. There is not even a sidewalk on the south side of the road because they don't have the right-of-way for it. These things are dangerous. Rio Verde, there's one way in from Scottsdale, and there's one way that goes down.
I have a question. Is your concern with the roundabout installation itself or the engineering process surrounding the roundabout design?
Basically that he used his PE and his education and everything on these reports, and they're phony. He used his PE, his professional registration, in order to mislead the public, And that's what I'd like him disciplined for, is that he's using his registration to mislead everybody.
I can provide a document to the board that will show that there is expansion going on. Maricopa County issued to all the residents of Rio Verde road expansion to two lanes in each direction, and they also issued their questions and comments regarding the paving of every mile road starting in 2020. What Paul Basher just told you was false.
Is that's within the City of Scottsdale's jurisdiction or Maricopa County?
This is Maricopa County.
A mile, 2 miles downstream.
So they are planning for expansion. It's not what he says, that it's just one lane and there's no, there are no plans for expansion in the next 20 years. That's absolutely false. I'll provide you with the document.
Okay, so what we have in front of us is a case that's been investigated. It's been vetted by engineers. The engineers have looked at it for problems. The end result is that this investigation concludes that there's no problem here and this should be dismissed. So that's the question in front of us right now.
I think further investigation is absolutely needed and encouraged for this.
Members of the board?
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to dismiss this case, P-19-059.
A second.
Just for further discussion, Mr. Chair, I'm trying to discern in my own mind as to what regulation Mr. Basha has violated in statute as a professional engineer, what the alleges of proposing is that I assume gross negligence is what they're making a case for. However, that pertains to the application of engineering practice and two professional engineers on the assessment review have justified it adequate. So without that claim of gross negligence, I mean, he hasn't violated in the complaint, in my mind, any statute in the performance of it, other than stamping these letters, which I think there was a letter of concern that has rectified that. So his sealed documents are corrected. Absent that, it's just a technical dispute that they disagree with the traffic studies, the volume, the design, and what the city of Scottsdale has adopted and proposed. That battle should be taken back to them. I don't really see where the board is going to adjudicate a technical issue on, you know, volume control, traffic studies, and other design parameters, for or against. We're really judging Mr. Basher against our regulations, the statutes for the professional practice of engineering. That's my comment before we take a vote.
Thank you, Gene. Anything else? Neil, do you have anything on this
one? I just think the ledgers need to go back to the city of Scottsdale, talk with them. I agree with what Gene's saying.
Any further discussion?
I just have one last request of the board. Are we able to open a complaint for lack of detour with this board?
I'm sorry?
Are we able to open a complaint for lack of detour for this to this board?
I'm not familiar with that term. What does that mean?
So there's no detour route for the roundabout, so there's single lane. So an accident has already happened in the middle of the first roundabout, which has backed traffic up, and there is no detour between 122nd to Fountain Hill. There's no route, and it's one lane in each direction currently.
You know, I'm really getting the feeling that your concerns might be best directed at the city themselves, because there's design standards in the city that they've adopted. There's a signed and sealed set of plans. There are these traffic counts that have surfaced here that Mr. Basha did. But all of this stuff has materialized under the authority of the city, not the authority of the Board of Technical Registration.
Well, I think he needs to be held accountable for falsifying the numbers and the information that's put into the traffic study.
Well, I think that there has to be consideration with the word estimate here. I mean, he's making estimates. And those estimates are past, present, and future.
You can make estimates, but when you have two previous reports that are hard numbers from those exact intersections and you still overestimate by 41%, that's not an error. That's fraud. You know, it's a conflict of interest for him to even do with these studies. You know, you don't do your own engineering studies for yourself.
I was just going to say, let's vote.
Okay. We will go to the vote. Hearing no further discussion, all in favor of the motion to dismiss?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, can we take a quick break?
Yes, we're going to take a 10, 15...
Five-minute
break. We're reconvening here after the break, and it is 10:50. We still have some items here to work through, so we'll carry on with the list. The next item is 6B1, Jason Kack, RLS. And there apparently is nobody here for that case. Is that correct? Okay.
6B1.
The case is P-019-051. The complaint is on April 8th, 2019. Board received an anonymous complaint that the respondent, after conducting an ALTA-ACSM land survey on APN 500-10-008D in Avondale, failed to record the survey after setting monuments as required in the Arizona Boundary Survey Minimum Standards 13C. The investigative conclusion is that the respondent failed to record a land survey no later than 90 days after its completion with the county recorder where the land is located if such survey establishes points or lines relating to the boundary or property lines in possible violation of ARS 33105, ARS 32128C4, as it relates to the Administrative Code Rule 43301, number 4. Staff recommendation. Issue respondent a letter of concern, reminding him to file a record of survey not later than 90 days after its completion with the county recorder where the land is located. I don't know how this didn't get it consented. I don't really have much on it. I'm comfortable with the staff recommendation.
So has it been recorded? Has this survey been recorded, or are we just telling him to record it?
You couldn't find the records have been lost. They couldn't, I guess, find the records so he could go back and redo it.
He worked for a company 15 years ago or something, and this survey surfaced by the anonymous complaint or complainer, and the survey I noticed, this ALTA-ACSM survey is marked with the zoning stamp, like received by the zoning department, so I don't even know if it should be recorded. It looks like it's some kind of submittal of some kind, and we don't really have any information as to, or I didn't see any information as to how he even got a hold of this survey. It may be a preliminary thing, but if you look, there's a preliminary or a review something and an extra something on there, and they're, I've got to zoom in here, they're signed by whatever the local jurisdiction is. So I'm not sure the project was even done, and the respondent has since left the company. The company's folded, so he's having trouble. He made some efforts to contact his old company to find out what was going on. He's having some trouble with recovering the old records.
Okay, that's all I need to know.
So, that's enough.
I'll make a motion to issue letter of concern, P-19-051.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, I'll call for a question. All in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing done, motion passes. Okay, we'll move on to 6C1. This is case P-19-046. Synopsis of the complaint. On April 3rd, 2019, board received a complaint alleging respondent and respondent firm offered professional services as a surveyor without benefit of board registration. The staff recommendations are civil penalty in the amount of $500, cost of investigation in the amount of $485, and the conclusions are that the respondent has violated ARS 32145 and ARS 32141 with so it's personal registration and firm registration that he's violated. And we have nobody here on the case, so I'll open it up for discussion if anybody has any discussion on the matter.
Do you think the fine's enough, in your opinion?
Well, Neil, I think the fine is nominal, but certainly not warranted complaint by the respondent. He thinks that the fine is excessive. Am I reading that correct?
Yeah.
So I disagree with that. I think it's the fine is certainly nominal, if not low.
Yeah, it's nominal based on our history. Yeah. Right.
Where would our history put an appropriate fine?
With these multiple citations, I would say, more north towards $1,000. $500 is certainly.
Yeah, $500 is usually for either the firm or the individual. Right. Here it's both, right?
It's both.
But
you know, it certainly can't be lowered is what I'm I'm getting at.
Yeah.
I'll entertain any motions of adjustment on that number.
I'll make a motion to offer the signed consent agreement, offer the consent agreement at P19046. Not signed within 30 days, formal hearing.
What about raising it to 1,000?
He's already complained about it being 500. I mean, we can go down that road, but...
Well, I do like the consistency, though. I mean...
Yeah, I would move that we raise it to 1,000.
Okay, I'll withdraw mine, so go ahead and make one, then.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we increase the civil penalty from $500 to $1,000. I'll second that.
And that includes the cost of investigation of $485 and all of the other terms of the proposed consent agreement. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second for... offer the consent agreement in the amount of $1,000, cost of investigation and $485. And that's it on that.
Mm-hmm.
And if not signed within 30 days, do we do that?
Hearing. Yeah.
Okay. All in favor of the motion?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Motion passes.
See him back in a couple months.
I will.
Next case, 6C2, case number P19-060. Synopsis of complaint. On May 21, 2019, the board received a complaint alleging that the responder and respondent firm advertised practice of architecture on Facebook without firm registration with the board. After the board received an inquiry from the Better Business Bureau regarding the status of the respondent firm's registration, the board records were searched and showed no indication that the respondent firm has ever been registered with the board. The investigative conclusion is that the respondent has violated ARS 32141 and ARS 32145. The staff recommendation is a letter of reprimand, civil penalty in the amount of $1,000, and the cost of investigation in the amount of $225,000. And it appears like this civil penalty is in line with what we've just agreed to in the last case.
Agreed.
Agreed.
Okay.
How can we issue a letter of reprimand? This guy is in the registrar, right?
True.
Sure. Can't do that.
My bad. My bad.
Just hit him up for the money.
Neil, did you have any comments on this, being an architect?
Yeah. I'd just like to hear Sean's...
Yeah, there's not a consent agreement.
Say what?
It's on the cover only.
It's not in the offer.
Okay. we still want to hear from John?
Just like some background on this. We have this this letter from him on June 13th saying, once he found out, he tried to get a hold of us, what can I do to... It seems like he was trying to be in accordance with our laws.
Yeah.
And it's so heartfelt, and here we are busting him when he didn't even know in the first place, and he's gone through the, you know, Arizona Hispanic Services to help him, and he's just trying to do the right thing.
I think he kind of got led in the wrong direction and didn't realize what it took to become an architect. And when it came down to it, and he realized that there would be a penalty involved by advertising as an architect, he kind of backed out, and we haven't heard from him since. He thought it might have been, what I think he thought it was going to be, is a $50 fee, like corporate commission, something like that, stating that he's allowed to be an architect. He didn't realize the education that was involved.
He didn't realize he actually had to be an architect to say he was an architect. Just that okay. Simple thing.
Right. What it took to
and
on.
When he's failed to respond back to us,
yes.
You can't get a hold of him.
Yeah, now he's taken off.
Okay.
I have somebody here to answer his questions for sure, and if he doesn't speak English, we would take care of that.
Okay.
I was a little unnerved by the site. I mean, it's ambitious, I'll say that, but I really think it's... It would mislead the average person. I mean, I look at his truck that says architecture on the side of it, parked in front of these huge buildings downtown somewhere. And, you know, maybe it doesn't say that he built those buildings, but boy, my mind is going to associate that that might be one of his projects.
Well, we know it's not downtown Kingman.
Yeah. There's more than two stories.
Ouch.
That doesn't.
I move that we offer the consent agreement as proposed.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Not signed within 30 days formal hearing. Protect that.
Jason, we know that.
Aye.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Okay. We will move on to 6E1. Complaints proposed to forward to hearing.
Can we just consent E1 and 2?
I'm second. Happy with that.
Yeah, they got
to
go.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to consent E1 and E2 to propose to move to formal hearing.
Motion, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, Alejandro.
Okay. not answering for Alejandro. The recommendation actually is formal hearing and criminal prosecution to the Attorney General's office, I guess. Just to clarify that in my mind. Is that intermediate step necessary, or can it just go straight to criminal prosecution?
No, we're asking for the board's direction to send this to the AG's office for criminal prosecution.
So formal hearing and AGs?
Yes.
What we want to hear? On both of them?
We want.
Just 6E1.
Okay. So I'll amend my motion. Make a motion to consent E1 and 2. Send E1 to formal hearing and AG's office, E2 to formal hearing. Is that what you wanted?
Yeah.
Second. Is this so you can answer a question at Flagstaff if somebody asks that you're prepared?
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? You good, Gene?
I'm good. I'm
okay.
Good.
Yeah. Anybody else? Okay, hearing nothing. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes. Thank you, Mr. Madison.
You're welcome. Thank you, Gene, for pointing out my error.
Okay, so that concludes 6E. According to my notes, we are all done with all of our enforcement matters. Is there anybody here that we missed, or I see people out in the audience there. Are you here for anything in particular? Okay, I just want to make sure I got everybody. I had a rough start this morning, as you all saw. So we will move on to licensing matters. Item seven.
Nothing.
Wait a second. Thanks. Item seven, I don't have a seven.
There's nothing.
There's nothing on item seven.
Nothing to consider there, okay, and we've sorted through the slopes out there. So let's go to item eight.
An upsetting.
Licensing consent agenda.
It's okay.
We're on 8A1, this is to be canceled. And I'm looking for Jones.
Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion that cancel registrations and certifications that have expired for 1 full year are on 8A1, as in the packet.
Okay, we've got a motion, do we have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second, all in favor of cancellations?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Andrew, you can keep it down.
Okay, we'll move to 8A2, and just a quick review of newly granted licenses. And everybody had a chance to look at that. Is everybody ready to move on to policy matters? I'm going to go ahead and move on to policy matters. Item 9. Review, consider possible action on the following A. Board's interpretation of HB 2569. Melissa, this sounds like you or Patty.
Well, I'll give the background. Patty drafted the memo and has been very detail-oriented about the board's responsibilities with regard to the implementation of this bill, which becomes effective today. So we promised you last month we would bring you back our proposed list of items to put out to the public about what they can give to us to determine if they are, in fact, residents to qualify for licensure under this particular new category. And so that's included, and Patty has also included other requirements and comments and questions for you. So,
Actually, I'd like to start with forms of documentation to establish residence. I would like to ask the board to reconsider number 3. Documentation demonstrating a change in permanent address and all pertinent records. We recently had an experience where we know that that could be worded that way, it could be a problem. So documents demonstrating residence in the state of Arizona to include utility bills, mortgage, lease. We recently just saw somebody essentially kind of went online and changed their address on a phone,
on a phone bill.
You know, that they could do that and not live here at all. So we need something more specific, like a utility bill, a lease, something that clearly establishes they reside in the state of Arizona. If we leave it this vague, licensing staff is going to have to constantly be bringing stuff back to you. Other than that, you do need to decide the residence requirements, but there's a lot more that you need to determine. Whether or not, in order to determine is their license at the same level as an Arizona license, it comes back to you. My understanding from the AG's office, at least for a while, that's going to be a need because only you can decide whether or not a license is at the same level. What I've suggested in here is when a person applies under this law, what they have to provide, the onus is on them to provide this information, then the onus on us is to go out and get it. We will do a backup review of it. We won't just take a person's word. But if they want to take this route, they need to produce that documentation that shows us it's the same level that they took the exam and their state of the exam was required, that they met the minimum requirements at the state they were at the time they were licensed. They need to get that confirmation from their state rather than we go out and search for it. There are some things in the law, and at the end of this, you'll see there's actually a list that the governor's office put out and actually has one error on it that I'll let Scott talk about. But essentially, if somebody has an open complaint, a pending complaint, they're awaiting hearing, They've been disciplined and they're still on probation. They can't apply under this law. So on the governor's checklist, I think they kind of make it sound like if you've ever had a complaint, you can't get licensed under this law. That's not really what it says. But it is a confusing paragraph in the law. So essentially, the interesting thing is you couldn't be qualified to apply under this law, but you might be qualified under a regular licensing application. So I guess at this point, are you comfortable with everything I've put in here? And then I've got a couple of questions we needed you to answer.
How different, again, I mean, I'm not engaged in depth, but how different is this than just applying for reciprocity? I mean, what?
We don't have reciprocity.
Everyone applies here as if they are initial applicant for
well,
registration.
Well, I guess maybe
right.
I'm,
and
use,
we
I'm
don't
using
have,
the wrong
we
word.
Don't
we
really,
don't have.
No, we accommodate those who have a blue cover from NCARB or an MLE from NCWS, and even if they have a record with CLARB, because those are established certificate programs where the applicant meets all the same requirements we have for registration, and actually a higher standards because
like
they require
law.
Right, they require the education. So we accommodate those. You guys delegated the authority to grant those to me several years ago, but it's the other applications, like when somebody doesn't have the perfect education from a NAV or ABET accredited program or no education, that we normally bring those cases to you to look at anyway, just to make sure they're qualified. But in the Big Five, we usually see most of our applications come from folks who are already registered in another state. And so those are applications that are easy to process, and we process those quickly. Really where we think this bill is going to have some impact is in the home inspection area, where this will provide people who are registered as home inspectors in a state that has different licensing requirements from ours access to reciprocity or comity or endorsement, whatever you want to call it here. And some of the states for home inspectors don't have the 30 parallel requirement or the submit a report for our review. So that's where we think this will be the impact for them.
There could be others. I mean, I talked to a person who teaches at the Landscape Architect School in Arizona, and he's thinking he can use this to get an Arizona license because he has a license in another state. That's something that would come to you guys. Does it qualify under this law or does it not qualify under this law? So there'll be some one-offs that we can't quite guess right now.
Yeah, some of the geology professionals might practice in states where registration isn't required, so you may see some of those, although I think the law would require registration to be equivalent or provide access here. So,
right, they're working in another state as geologists but didn't have a registration, this wouldn't apply
right,
at all.
Right. So we may see some, but most of the applicants, if we get any, I think will be home inspectors.
So just to be clear, if I know somebody in another state that wants to be a registered architect in Arizona, it just makes it easier if they forward their NCARB?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they can just go the
regular
route. And
if they don't do that, what do they do?
To be honest with this, for a while it will take longer than if you just submit an application through the normal process.
Right. Especially if they have an NCARB certificate. So,
you know, if they've got their exams, if they've got their COEs, it would just be faster.
But they have to be living in the state.
Right.
They have to
reside
in the state.
I'm asking if somebody lives in another state and they want to be registered here.
Just apply through the regular course. Don't worry about this.
This wouldn't apply then because you don't live here.
Right.
This is only for people that move here.
Right.
This is the new law.
Right. So I have a couple questions for you. This list of things that people will have to provide to show that they qualify. One of the things is...
Where are you looking, Patty?
What page?
What page?
Let's see, page 2289.
Okay. In red?
In red. That first, there's a paragraph in red. Let's see, I did the numbers on the pages.
So the question is, okay, so essentially, what will the board require somebody to submit to show that they're at the same practice level in the state they're licensed in another state? So, you know, documentation that you're licensed, we can research the practice level. The applicant needs to submit something, if their laws in their state that show what the scope of practice is. Would you also accept documentation other than laws, such as COEs, affidavits from supervisors, or do you just want to stick with what is the scope of practice in the law say?
Well, when you're getting down to that, you know, level, you're almost going back to like a direct application.
Yep.
I mean, the presumption is if you're licensed and practiced for a year in another state and you're recognized in that state, I thought this was supposed to be an expediting approval, so we accept that.
That's not what it turned out to be. They have to be at the same practice level in the other state, so you need to look at that other state's practice level to determine if it's
practice
the same.
Level. Okay, yes. But now we're into the, let's say, the COEs. Okay, that's application level. So if, for instance, in another state, it doesn't require a PE to approve the COE. Okay, let me ask my question again.
I'm
confused. Yeah.
Okay, so they have to prove that their license in another state is the same scope of practice as the scope of practice for a PE in this state.
Right.
Do you just want to look at the law that states the scope of practice in the other state,
mm-hmm.
or do you want to allow them to submit other things? If the law isn't clear, do you want them to be able to submit other documentation to support their application? Or do you just want to stick with the law?
I would just stick with the law. Okay. I mean, COEs, I mean, I don't know. Sometimes you get someone to write whatever you want. And that might not even help us. I mean, we'd be asking for COEs of someone else to explain the laws of that state to us, which they could just do.
And
so,
I think it's plainest just to be honest.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's fine. Ultimately, it's just going to be whatever the board determines it'll need in order to determine whether it's the same scope of practice. So certainly it can be just the laws.
So we brought this to the home inspectors. Now, an important part of this, they have to have the same level of practice in the other state, but they don't have to have met the same requirements to get a license in the other state. So if another state required 6 years to get a license and we required 8 years, we couldn't consider that they didn't have 8 years. So that's kind of a lead-in for you guys into the home inspector concern. In Arizona, home inspectors are required to take 4 hours of pools and spas education. The law doesn't say that if you have a license as a home inspector in another state, you have to have. Essentially, the home inspectors would like to make that a requirement, but I don't know that the law allows you to make a requirement that they have pools and spas. Any thoughts, Scott?
That's really going to be up to the board to decide if it's the same scope of practice or whether it's a different scope of practice. If it's a different scope of practice, there isn't necessarily.
I can't really do a carve-out.
See, I know we had a big discussion about this at the
yeah.
at the home inspector meeting that, you know, I would consider it to be a different scope of practice, you know, but.
So if they don't have pools and spas, it will come to you and you'll have to decide at that
right,
time.
Right, and maybe it'll be as okay. You need to take this 4-hour course,
yeah.
You know, to get yourself up to the level of an Arizona home inspector.
Or could they restrict the practice? Because now home inspectors can elect to conduct pool and spas if they have the education. They don't have to include it in a home inspection.
That's an interesting question because I don't know that 2569
right.
provides for a different classification of license.
Right.
I think it's just for an equal across the license.
Okay. So do you want to make that as a case-by-case?
Well, we're dealing with city codes. City codes require enclosure requirements. I think home inspectors should be fully aware of what those minimum code requirements are.
Does this law allow?
The problem is the board can't really decide any additional educational requirements the person would have to go through. If there is a state-specific examination that's already being given to all applicants for that license, the board can require that the person take that state-specific examination or an examination of state-specific laws related to that practice. But outside of that, the board can't really have a different educational requirement for somebody coming under this than for people already licensed in the state. It's just, it's more a matter of saying if it's an equivalent license in New Hampshire, then the fact that they've got it is going to transfer over to us, regardless of how they got it. If New Hampshire says they can do it here.
Right, but the whole crux is it an equivalent license? If you have to have, to get your license here, you have to have pool and spa training. Is it technically an equivalent license?
Well, and legally, I would say that, and I would shift the focus a little bit. I wouldn't say the question would be, what would be the education required to get the license here, but rather, is the scope of practice of the license the same? If the scope of practice here is you can do pools and in New Hampshire you can't, then it may be a different license. The board may determine that it's not functionally the same license, but I wouldn't look at the education requirement to get to the license because that goes for different part of the U.S. statute.
Case by case.
Next one, I think Scott, I talked to Scott about this, so you might have something to say, but the law implies that at the time this person was licensed in the other state, there were some kind of minimal standards for education and experience. So what happened if they got a law through some grandfathering process where they do not meet any minimum standards for education or experience? Could they apply through this route? Can you speak to that?
In the statute, I believe there is a requirement that, let's see. Under the statute, states where the person was licensed or certified by another state, there were minimum educational requirements and applicable work experience and clinical supervision requirements in effect. And the state verifies that the person met those requirements. So I would interpret the statute as stating that there was some kind of an educational requirement going into it. As to what that requirement is, the statute doesn't speak. But there, if they were grandfathered in and there were no educational requirements in that grandfathering, the way I interpret the statute, that would not necessarily meet our requirements. So there would have to, under 2569, actually under the statute that 2569 is attached to, 324302, there is a requirement that there was a minimum educational requirement at the time they got their license.
And is that also a minimum testing requirement as well?
Education and experience,
because
it says they have to have passed the test.
Because Wyoming just gives their PE licenses to their professors. They don't have to take the test or anything. Just, here, professor, here, have a license. Could they come here and actually say, okay, well, now I want to be a practicing engineer or architect?
Well, legally, I would assume their argument would be that there is an educational requirement in Wyoming and that they've met it by attaining the role of professor, and the legislature in Wyoming determined that they had met the educational requirement by attaining that level. I don't know where that argument would go legally, but I'm sure that would be the argument.
Those were my questions. So is everybody comfortable with if a person didn't meet that one requirement that there was some kind of minimum education and experience requirement, then they would just come through our regular. The thing about this is only applies to this particular route for licensure. If they don't qualify under this, they would just come through our regular application process. So if you guys are good with it, they were grandfathered in, there wasn't any kind of minimum requirement, they wouldn't come through this process, they would just apply through the regular process.
There's a lot of things in this law that would prevent somebody from qualifying under this law, in which case they could try applying through the regular process. Is that making any sense? I know it's really confusing. So
they would just ask regulators before they draft
themselves
for input. It would make our lives so much easier, but...
You're assuming the people in the legislature are smarter than...
Other than that, are you guys good with the rest of it? And then we can always bring it back to you if we run into problems and you can tweak it. It gives us a place to start, though, because the law takes effect today.
And you see a page, well, the page that follows Patty's questions is the document we received from the governor's office, which, in my opinion, you can ignore. But I would appreciate if you would take a look at the page that follows, which is what Kurt, Patty, and I worked on to put up on our website, trying to explain the process about this particular license type to the public. And if you're okay with that, give us a vote, and then Kurt can upload it.
I have it up right now, so if I need to modify it, I can modify it. Yes.
We're going to change the slide,
right? Right. We're going to make the documentation demonstrating address change.
Of the following, or just one?
We're going to require two of the following.
Okay.
Yes.
Can I make a suggestion of the first paragraph? After a home inspector applicant must prove the following, a home inspector applicant must provide evidence to substantiate the following.
Good. Thank you.
Does it have to be that wordy, Scott? Why can't it just be provide?
This is just for home inspectors, this page?
No,
a traffic ticket's evidence of the driver's license, isn't it?
Well, I know, but this page that we're posting on the website,
pretty much
only for home inspectors.
It does apply to everybody.
It should apply to everybody.
So, would you like me to remove the home inspector? But
We could say, begin accepting applications for universal licensure. The applicant must provide evidence to substantiate the following. Yeah.
Then you're going to have to change down here where it says benefits of this process over the standard. I mean, there's some very specific home inspector stuff down here.
Mm-hmm.
Parallel inspections and stuff like that. I mean, you're going to have to say for home inspectors,
right.
Blah, 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 blah.
Well, I can put in the title.
Pertaining specifically to home inspectors.
Now, when they do this process, they still have to fill out an application,
yes,
right?
Yes, and pay the fee, and, you know, for home inspectors, they still need to have their fingerprint
card and all
right,
that stuff.
Right,
okay.
So the bill doesn't exempt them from that.
And they still, they fill out the application and say, I'm not disciplined, you know,
right, they still
and
have
they
to
check
answer
it, no, them. And then we find out that they are.
Right.
Then
we can
that.
Deny them or
okay.
Use that as a basis.
Okay.
Yeah.
Scott had something to add.
Yeah, I would encourage the board to consider whether they want to have listed benefits of one route over another, because that could imply the board is recommending one route over another, which could turn into a problem if the person was denied by one route or if problems occurred, the board would be in the position of giving advice.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this whole section.
Well, no, I think I keep this following states do not license home inspectors just So someone from one of those states doesn't just come in and go, hey, I want this, and be like, well, no. I mean, that just kind of, they can let, as soon as they look on the website and they are in, you know, California, and they be like, oh, well, I guess I can't do this because too bad.
Yeah, I would recommend, however, that the board keep an eye on those states to make sure that there's no legislation to change that.
Sure. And Kurt will have to move, the applicant will complete and submit a copy of DPS fingerprints to the pertaining to home inspectors paragraph.
Do we define how the state license application that last sentence? The last sentence says the out-of-state license application may take longer. That wouldn't be true of all out-of-state license apps. Do we define that that means like, take out the 25? Oh, you meant it?
I removed all that except for the state paragraph and just added as of 8/27/2019.
No, I know we have applicant has not had a license or certificate revoked or voluntary surrendered in the licensing state. That's their previous state, right?
Right, right.
What if they have here?
I think that would apply in here to any state or jurisdiction.
This is previous.
So should that say licensing state, or should that say
in any jurisdiction? I like that better.
Right.
And we have to take out home inspector first.
So you don't want someone who lost their license here go to get a license someplace else, and then come back here and go, well, I didn't get a license now. Like, Padilla.
And is that any license, or else just the license corresponding to what they're applying for?
I think that losses any.
We have to take out home inspector and a couple of the preceding ones.
Yeah, that one's right there. One more.
Well, take that out.
Yeah.
The statute is a little bit more specific when it comes to the has not had a license or certificate revoked or voluntarily surrendered. It is true that that says in any other state or country that would not apply here, although it would appear to apply to any discipline in any other state or country. But it carries on to say while under investigation for unprofessional conduct. So that is a little bit more focused than revoked or voluntarily surrendered in any jurisdiction. It would be while under investigation for unprofessional conduct, and it would be in any other state or country.
So should these two somehow be more connected with one another?
Instead of in any jurisdiction, just use the same language in any other state or country. Where you have above in licensing state should probably say in any other state or country too.
But this whole sentence seems to be kind of
thought
of. The applicant has to provide evidence that their licensors maybe just...
Provide evidence.
It may actually...
Whatever Scott said. Whatever long-winded thing Scott said.
No, that's at the beginning.
Instead of provide evidence.
I Thank you. And actually, from a purely legal standpoint, the best advice I could give would be to use the exact statutory language in there, because it is a bit more focused. The safest course of action is to literally just copy the statutory language into that.
I have a question, Scott. I didn't think that the legislation pertained to other countries. I mean, does Governor Ducey have the jurisdiction to equate licensure in other countries with licensure in Arizona through legislation? I mean, it's pretty bold to go outside the United States. I mean, isn't his laws governed by the Constitution of the United States, not the Constitution of other countries? I mean,
I would love to be able to answer that question, but I'm not sure I can really, I'm not sure I'm able to answer that question for the board.
It's just problematic. I mean, I don't know Mexicanada. I mean, I can get a little, you know, there are many countries in the world.
I would encourage the board for the foreseeable future to probably concentrate on the United States and its territories. Should we get an application from somebody licensed in France, that would be something we could certainly address at that point.
On a case-by-case basis, yeah. Okay.
Which is what we have to do when we get someone from through the regular process anyway, so.
Actually, if you look at what I gave you, the way the law is written is that the other license has to be in a state.
A state.
When we get into other countries, they may have been revoked in another jurisdiction or country. So it starts off, and that's part of at the beginning, I say they jump around, and sometimes it's only states, and sometimes it's another jurisdiction, and sometimes it's another country. If you look through, I've underlined how it jumps around. So when it talks about having a license, it's in another state.
State, okay.
But if it talks about an investigation or a revocation or whatever, it's broader.
It's broad. Okay, all right. Now, that's clearer. That's clearer. Okay.
Now, Scott says we should use all the language that's in the bill. Why don't we just put a link to the bill?
We did at the very top.
I know. But that's
just be done?
Yeah. It's like, hey, on whatever, on August 27th, the state did this, here's the link to the bill.
Our governor signed this. Good luck.
Yeah.
I think the governor's office is done.
Oh, demanded us to explain his goofy bill. Is that what it was?
Yeah, let me look at this thing.
I removed that one sentence that had all those below it and just kind of combined it out. That's just a long list of bullets except for the supplements for the residency. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that, instead of saying the license state verifies that's just been cut out, this is just part of the list of evidence that ends with substantiated.
Do you remember that email, Scott? They put out, there's this part in here called the Universal Recognition, whatever.
Can you change that licensing state to U.S. state?
I just don't want us to put something on the website that contradicts the law, and then someone says, oh, I saw it on the website. I mean, shouldn't we just point to the law and say, here's the law?
We got this email, didn't it say the governor insisted on something on the website? Yep. So if you look at the middle, this is what the governor's office put out, but it's not 100% correct.
True.
Right. Really? Surprise. Yeah. I'm surprised.
So it's the universal recognition is what they put out. Kurt, do you have it? Where you can show that to you?
In the package, yes, page correctly.
Universal recognition is not my choice.
Oh, that's what it's universal recognition. 2291.
I mean, this thing that we got from the governor's office, was that something that there's was that just for the board, or was that something that's public knowledge, or?
I think it's their suggestion.
Yes, I. No. Legally, I would recommend there's one aspect of universal recognition that my advice would be to not have. And it's, if you scroll up a bit, very, very top, yeah, in that checklist, number three in the checklist, do not have any past or pending investigations or complaints. The problem is, there are two issues with that. The first one is that the person may have had a past complaint that was dismissed, but that checklist would give them the impression they would be excluded. The second would be that the law itself actually provides a path to come back if you have had discipline under personally under number 6, A6, 4302A6, the person has not had discipline imposed by any other regulating entity. If another jurisdiction has taken disciplinary action against the person, the regulating entity shall determine if the cause for the action was correct in the matter resolved. If the matter has not been resolved by that jurisdiction, the regulating entity may not issue a license or deny a license until the matter is resolved. So the statute itself, although it appears to begin by saying you haven't had discipline imposed by any other regulating entity, the entire rest of that section concerns the fact that you can be licensed if you've been rehabilitated from that discipline. So I would encourage the board to, in fact...
But that's in the actual statute, right?
That's in the actual statute, yes. Okay. So I would...
I don't know.
The interpretation...
My vote is just to put the link to the statute and let the people figure it out. But...
Let's go back to the previous page that had those several items. I mean, when we look at this thing...
This is a checklist, right? Who wrote this, by the way?
The governor's. Governor.
The governor wrote this, okay.
Well, the governor's office.
Somebody makes an application to us, right? Or they're trying to. You've been licensed in your profession for at least 1 year. Check mark, I'm good. I'm good standing in all states, I'm good. Do not have any past or pending investigations or complaints, I'm not good. I do have one. I had a past one. So I can't check that. Does that automatically just kick me over to the regular process?
Yeah.
Is it that simple?
You can't do that.
This is a checklist that you would just look at to see whether or not to apply by this process. So yes, you may look at that and determine that you're not actually qualified to come in under 2569, and then you would go to the other process, whereas in reality, you could be qualified to come in under 2569. So that could mislead potential applicant from applying under 2569.
That's what Scott was saying. The governor's checklist doesn't comply with the actual law the governor wrote.
Is this authoritative? I mean, has it been handed down to us to follow?
Well, this is what it says. We are asking that language we provide gets placed on all applicable websites and forms. We expect boards to work with their assistant attorney generals to determine how they should write the law, things to do, add information language to all forms that include application information, add a question or information regarding universal direct recognition directly to the application, add information language to the board website. I think what Melissa and Kurt put together is maybe doing that rather than using the governor's language.
That was the intent.
Yeah, because...
Well, I understand that, but the governor wrote this and wants this on the website, so why don't you just put this on the website and put a link to the bill?
As a staff member, I don't know. When I release them in or whatnot, it might be
and then,
a handful. But.
We will do what you want. If you want this particular page on the website to comply with the governor's edict, then let's do it. It's just our AG said he didn't feel it was legally sufficient.
Okay, but let's get real here. This happens to somebody, and they have a past thing that they've cured, all right, or been remedied. And they call us up and they say, well, this says this. Can I do this? Or they contact their counsel, and their counsel says, yeah, do it. I just don't see the big hang-up there. It's a checklist for people to follow. If they believe they can make it, they'll follow it. If they don't,
they'll go the other route.
And that's why we're putting a link to the law in there, too.
Yeah.
Okay, then that's what we'll do.
I mean,
that's my sense. I don't know what the rest of the board thinks about it. But.
No, but I mean, it's conservatively restrictive. In other words, what it's doing is basically filtering out people who otherwise would qualify.
Or might.
Or might. So it's not harmful to the extent that it's just sending people down another path that they didn't necessarily have to go through. But it's not letting people get in who shouldn't belong in. So meeting this is more stringent than meeting the actual law.
And if somebody has a question, they can bring it to us and say, you know, I had this in California and whenever, and, you know, that was 25 years ago and it was a $25 fine. Can I still apply this way? I mean,
Scott, do you see any problems with us just doing that?
I don't get a vote.
Well, asking your legal opinion on it.
Yeah.
Are we doing anything that we are not being directed to do by the governor's office? Actually, I think we're doing exactly what we're being directed to do by the governor's office.
Well, my legal advice would be contained to the statement that the question, the check for do not have any past or pending investigations or complaints, that is legally incorrect, and that is legally not in conformity with the actual statutes, and the board will be posting information for applicants, potential applicants, that is not legally in conformity with the statute. As to any questions of how this comports with the governor's office intent, or I can't speak to any of that.
Well, how about just saying, I'm just reading those that wants us to put information out there. It doesn't have to be exactly as they stated it. So we could tweak it between this and ours. And what do you think, Melissa?
I'm right now leaning towards what JMAT said. Just put what they want on the website with the link to the bill.
Don't most people call you guys and say, I'm reading all this stuff? Is there a cheat sheet? Is there... Because they will ask specific questions.
Well, we are going to, for the application, we'll do what we do with all applications. We'll write out instructions. This is what you need to submit. So they'll have that.
Okay. Okay.
Another question. With the fifth bullet in the meet all resident in testing, I mean, they don't have to meet a testing requirement, right?
They do.
With the pools and spas kind of thing discussion you guys have.
Well, but they, like if they're surveyors, they still need to take our Arizona state specific. So,
yeah, that applies directly to jurisprudence laws.
Scott, I know you're bothered with number three. How bothered would you be if we put unresolved?
Can we just add to that sentence?
I
don't know.
I mean,
I believe the board can certainly modify it as
it's the government. Just redact the whole thing.
I'm almost afraid to do that, though, because it's not on solid footing from the eyes of this group right now. So if we start flipping and tinkering, we're probably exposing ourselves to something. I mean, if we take it as it is, like Jason suggested, just take it as it is and pass it through.
You can even say universal recognition, HB, blah, blah, implementation from Doug Ducey's office. From Governor Ducey's office.
I would put that on the actual web page itself, and I just say this was drafted by the governor's office.
Yep, I say we do that.
That works for me.
Maybe tell Emily there's something wrong.
It's their mess. I think they can clean it up.
Let's just put it up. You guys okay with that? With a link to the bill?
Yep. Okay. A link to the bill.
And then for our internal policies, we'll put something together, okay?
Right, and, you know, like the home inspector comes in, you can give him the lines that you've already wrote that says in these states you don't have it, and you know, you just give that to them, the fingerprint card and all that stuff.
Exactly. Okay. So we have our direction then.
We don't need a vote.
That the board is provided using the sufficient direction.
This is a quick one right here for the home inspectors. There's their checklist on the second page. Probably needs to be tweaked, of course, but this is the only application that's been created so far for this. It's just for the home inspectors, as we assume there would be the clean population group. And then it's asked for everything, all these things to be checked off or within the document itself. So, certification, took an action, examination, training courses.
Right, and I think all the stuff you guys already wrote, the proof of resident, you just give that to individual applicants. Say, here you go. You know, when someone asks for that application, you can just, you know, modify that so it gets rid of all the mucky muck, but here's what we need, you know.
And I'll tweak this. This is one of the pages that's on that checklist. It's, and they've signed it, included with the packet.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't
it's clear as mud. Thank you.
Well, it's clearer than it was. Not really.
Did we clarify the residency?
We need to vote.
Yeah,
we do. Okay.
No, I think we have our direction. We're probably good. We'll put it in the minutes.
Are we all right?
Concern. I want to hear a list of the specific documents that we're going to accept for residency.
We get so many questions about this stuff. That
Patty had the...
Well, you know, let me back up a minute here. Yeah. I'm kind of frosty about this.
You're frosty?
Why isn't the AG telling us what we need? That's the practice of law, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
But the AG didn't weigh in on the bill.
Well, let's ask him. Let's wait till something blows up and then ask him.
We actually took that from the AG's advice. They wrote up something that we gave you last meeting, and they said, you know, these are different examples of what you could use for residency. So we looked at them and pulled out ones for you to consider that are the cleanest.
Why are we making new stuff? There's got to be a standard of residency right now.
Well, and that's what the AG's advice was.
Because it's the government.
So we have that from the AG. They gave us what's currently used in various agencies. We pulled out what would be cleanest for the board. I mean, there were some in there that we kind of talked about, and you know, some people said we don't want that, like bank records. So they did give us advice. You gave us the charge of going and looking at it and making recommendations to you. And so that's what we pulled out of the AG's.
But I mean, why isn't there just one standard? This is what residency is in Arizona.
There is no statewide standard, but this provides the board with the discretion to be able to put together a list that's going to be most responsive to its actual needs and the documents that the people applying may have. With all the different agencies, there may be different documents that are more readily accessible to their boards. So this actually gives you guys the most flexibility to figure out what's right for you. I mean, you could take all those documents from our standpoint. It's just you can narrow the list to the ones that actually are going to be most focused for you.
We could bring it back to you next month and start off with this, but
I'm just befuddled at all of this.
Really?
Government.
Befuddled that the government is a mess?
I mean, there's not one. I mean, there's no, like, minimum standard of identification in Arizona.
No, because some people don't get driver's licenses. You can get an ID card, but yeah, there are people who don't drive and people who don't register to vote and, you know, people like my children who live at home and never pay a utility bill.
They wouldn't be applying for a license to work, so...
They might. They might.
How did we make it from 1912 to 2019 without a standard? I mean, there's got to be something that people have in practice, right?
Different agencies have different definitions, so that's what the AG's office gave us to work with. Just one suggestion, rather than demonstrating a change in permanent address, just demonstrating permanent address.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing that if you have a permanent address all along, it would be something different.
And instead of all pertinent records, unpertinent records such as. Take out a change in. In Arizona.
Any other comments?
No, I like our list of five things.
I think it's nice and clean.
It is. Yeah. And since the bill was originally a military spouse's bill, I thought military form 2058 would be good.
What is that?
It's orders that you go and live in Arizona and report to wherever. Right, Rob?
It's something similar to that. It's showing it changing. But yeah, it changes station kind of for a spouse.
I think it's clean because, as I said, we just learned a lesson how somebody could manipulate supposed change in address. So, yeah.
There should be a window of time, like they show us in Arizona address from 10 years ago.
Within a year.
Every day.
Date of application.
Date of application.
Does this work for you guys? Does it work well for you guys? I think that's most important to me, that whatever works for our staff to execute this.
This one or this one.
That's my concern, as licensing isn't trying to interpret.
We want to keep it.
And so we've decided that this is not actually going to go on the website.
Yes, that is going to
be
the
internal, like the governor's thing and the link. This is going to be internal to give to people with an application or something similar.
Right. Good?
Works for me.
All right.
We done with that?
I hear you, Neil.
I hope
so. What?
Just dying.
Okay, let's move on if we're
9B.
Done. Everybody satisfied?
Yeah, we're good.
Okay, thank let's you. Go to 9B, the 2021 budget appropriation request.
Okay, it is that time of year, and so you know, Patty worked on our budget request because she is better with buddies, which is the...
Which is this ridiculous thing.
The 25-page thing. It's a computer program that's really, really difficult to deal with, and I don't have the patience. So Patty kindly undertook that. She's kinder to it than I would be. So this is due September 1. So you know, we have already submitted this as a draft, just to make sure we meet the deadline. The big deal, in my opinion, for you is to look at our justifications, which are individual funding requests that we're asking extra. We're asking for extra money to do. So the 25-page form is really difficult to read through and kind of understand because it looks really repetitive page after page. But the five funding issues are the ones that we just want you really to pay attention to. And if you have questions, obviously, on any of the other issues, Patty's the best person to ask since I don't track well. But those five, it's on page
2300,
exactly. Employee retirement funds. We have two employees whose names shall not be spoken who have... never take sick leave, and if they retire in the next coming year, we may not have enough in our personal services line item to pay for what they're entitled to. And what the state does is you can, if you have a certain number of sick leave hours, you can get up to $10,000 a year for 3 years paid.
Thacker.
No. And so we want to make sure we have $47,000 extra dollars in the budget if those two individuals decide to retire this year, this coming fiscal.
And this actually gets broken down over 3 years, so it's a continuous.
Jason, about your time. Use it or lose it.
Yeah.
Every year.
Exactly.
Right. Use it or lose it.
Yeah. And then
of course,
what we're
working
doing,
with revenue we're bringing in, not people's tax money.
Right.
So.
Right. We are also, because we just started our online renewals, we are not charging, and I know we discussed this some months ago, but we are not charging the credit card processing fees because we wanted to see how much they would be and what that cost might be to pass along. So we have an estimated for the coming year, because that's what this budget is for, of another $47,000, because we don't want to eat that 2% credit card charge. Yeah, we want to have the applicants pay that for us because it's substantial if we have, you know, 50,000 people renew every year. We wouldn't, but you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
Even if we had 12,000 people, we want to capture that. So that request is in here. We also feel that it's important to have what we're calling an IT program manager available once our data is cleaned and we are still up and running with our current computer system. We'll need to hire somebody to come in and work through bugs and help us fix things that our internal staff may not be able to do. So we don't expect to hire anyone on the same scale as who we currently have employed, but it would be nice to have somebody available to us no more than, like, what did we say, 10 hours a week?
A month.
A month.
Is that going to be GL bugs, Solutions?
No.
Just backup.
You have names in mind?
We'll have to put it out.
Yeah.
Is it an employee, or is it somebody that already works for the state, or is it a contract?
It could be any of those three. It just depends. We're saying we're thinking it'll be about $20,000, and there are vendors on state contract already who can provide us with personnel. It's like a temporary person who has IT skills just to come and help us work through whatever bugs we might have in the computer system until we're ready to put out for Salesforce.
Thank God.
How long do you envision employing them?
This would just be for the year, so it's an interim year. We're hoping the data cleanse will be finished in this fiscal, and then for the following fiscal, have somebody on contract to come in and do these fixes as we're readying to go to Salesforce.
Do you think the number's low? I mean,
it is low, but...
Well, Alejandro won't charge that much.
He won't? Okay, cool.
He can probably work on the weekends.
Yeah. Well, and Rob and Kurt are pretty good about working through some of the bugs, but there is going to be some, we anticipate some programming that will have to be undertaken, and I don't want to take them away from their other duties and responsibilities for any length of time, so.
I guess, again, the number seems low. Can we up the number, or, I mean, are you asking us? Or?
You need to be able to justify.
Yeah.
Because right now we don't know, it's a guess, so it's hard to justify 30,000.
You're doing 10 hours a month times some rate times 52 weeks in a year.
That's what we
minus holidays, plan. Minus all that.
The higher we go, the more justification we better be.
Got it.
And we don't know how much that would be at this point, so we are putting in this estimate. I mean, we will, and we always do, have some leftover funds at the end of fiscal. We could earmark if we end up using an IT temp for longer than we expect. But this is us giving the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting and Joint Legislative Budget Committee an idea that we want to spend some of our funds this way.
Yeah. This is our own money, so...
Right.
We're just asking permission to spend our own money.
Right. Right.
Which seems ridiculous, too, but...
Let's see.
The fourth issue is digitization of our agency records. One of the gifts that my predecessor left us is
paper,
exactly. And it is a governor's initiative to digitize everything and clear out space. So we would like to do that. We've actually been working on what I call the master files project for about 6 years, but we have tons of paper here, from original hard copy application files to investigative files to paper renewals. I mean, everything that this agency has generated until online renewals is generated in paper.
For like investigations, how long do you have to retain that stuff?
That's on the record.
Right.
We have a retention schedule. So as long as somebody's licensed, we need to retain it. If somebody gets canceled, we have a schedule at what point we would destroy those old records.
But you said like you still have investigation paperwork from back whenever.
25 years, I think. 25. We match the AG's office investigative files retention schedule.
Okay.
I doubt anyone's going to come 25 years later and look, but
The 25 years is for hearings.
Not just...
But I mean, someone that didn't have a firm registration got charged $50 or $500 or whatever.
There's actually, we have to keep them for 25 years if there was a discipline. There's a law.
Yeah, so it's really burdensome, guys. It really is.
Nuclear is 40.
40. Good to know. Hopefully we'll be around.
So what is 144.8 get us?
Well, we're not even sure, but we kind of stole this from another agency who has about 90,000 licensees, the Cosmetology Board, and they had gone with this digitization project last fiscal, and this is what they requested as a continuing quote.
By an outside contractor?
Right, to pay an outside contractor to come in, assess the type of records, actually process and digitize everything, and then destroy the hard copies.
Melissa, question. Are these, when you digitize, let's say, a file, is it scannable, sortable, or
right.
is it a flat film? I mean, there's different ways to scan documents.
Right.
What is
They'll
this
They'll
effort?
Organize the files. It's part
right.
of the cost. So if we want to look up somebody's file, we'll have a way, we'll have a code number, probably their license number, and we can look up their file. It'll be organized, it'll be linked.
Okay. But it's not searchable. In other words,
It should be.
So the content
yeah.
of the file that you
right.
that you digitized is searchable.
Right. So
oh,
for instance,
okay.
if we get a complaint against Gene Montgomery,
right. you could search on that.
We should be able to call up what I call your master file, which would have Gene Montgomery's license application, your transcripts, your COEs, your renewals, any other investigations, board
mm-hmm.
orders that we might have collected about you available. It doesn't
right.
mean we give all of that info out, but
right.
it's all categorized for you.
In that system.
Right,
okay.
in that system. So
back to Jafu's question, because we're running out of time, we use another agency's research and quote for now. We have started working with a company to come in and get us a cleaner quote so that as we go forward, when OSPB says, wait a minute, where did you get these numbers from, you know, we can hand them the newest information we have. But we're kind of stuck on time.
So understanding that and the point of this exercise, maybe just food for future thought, is there a position for a super IT person, scanner, copy maker kind of person that we could throw together for $164,000?
Well, we're using temps now. It's $18 an hour. It will take a decade, and they won't be organized.
No, I mean hire an employee to do all that and the IT. And
yeah. But here's the thing. These IT temps specialize. So somebody who does programming work isn't someone who wants to scan and upload into the file.
Yeah, I'm not talking about hiring IT temps. I'm talking about hiring a person to do both of those jobs as an employee.
We could. It's really expensive to employ an IT person because they earn about twice an hour what you pay me.
We also, once we hire somebody, we're obligated to them. We can't just let them go.
Okay.
Right, and we have to pay them all the state benefits and retirement, which is about 45% above their salary. So if somebody comes to work for us and earns $50,000 a year, we're paying them their salary and about 45% more in their employee-related expenses. So that's a direct cost to us of almost $100,000. For one employee who earns only 50. So if an employee came to us and earned $200,000 as, you know, an hourly employee, then we'd have to pay them a lot more, like we'd have to budget a lot more to employ an IT person. So
for a contract employee, what your preference is.
Right.
There's no benefits at all provided.
And correct. The scanning is a terminal project anyway.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So, yeah, we've had several temps working on the scanning project for us, but it's taking a long time, and it's not as efficient as it could be if we hire a digitizing contractor to come in and organize.
I've done that at the county, and it really is a cost savings and a money or a efficiency issue. They can get a lot of work done in a short amount of time.
Good. So. Yeah, and we need that.
Okay.
And then finally, we want to pay the AG's office more because we are currently employing not just Scott, but Deanie as well. And we haven't isolated the money we would pay for Deanie separately. So we want, I think because our backlog has been so long and so big and we need to up the amount we pay to make sure we can move our cases. So this is what we're asking for. I don't know if we're going to get everything we ask for, but we have to ask. Otherwise, we won't know.
Do these things normally evolve into a negotiation, or is it a yes and no thing, or how does that work?
More of a yes or no. More of a yes or no, but actually, we have a good analyst. You know, she may call us and say, you know, we can't quite see the justification for this, but maybe. But I think she would discuss with us. And, you know, when we get to the digitization, we may actually have enough information then that it won't be that much.
Yeah.
Right.
And you'll do the justifications and submit them. And
yes, and we have. And you have copies of the one-pager. Some are less than that. Like, a funding issue for employee retirement funds. It's basically just two paragraphs. And the one, obviously, for the credit card processing is a little longer, and our IT is a little longer, and then digitization is even longer. So we do provide our written explanation about why we're asking for these funds. And again, they may come back to us and say, we don't think that's good, or they may ask us to justify something different, or they may just say, no, you wanted 140 some odd thousand, we're only going to allow you to get 75 for this year. We just don't know yet. So anyway.
Do you need an action from us?
Sure.
I think we need your
approval of the budget. Now, the budget, the strategic plan, and the strategic IT plan are all basically the same. So items B and C are basically the same. You can vote once, I think. Right, Scott?
Yeah.
Cool. Any other questions?
Just a question. I noticed in your revenue schedule, you're projecting flat revenue for the next 2 years. We don't see any increase or expansion in our revenue at all.
I look back through 2014 on our number of registrants, and we're flat.
We're flat. So we're just kind of saturated. Okay.
Keep in mind, we're not married to that. If we make more money than that, we will.
No. I'm glad. I'm hoping that the state will grow and the registrants might increase. But conservatively, you're just assuming it's flat.
It's been kind of going like.
Right. Yes, okay.
Do Gene, just going back a week or two, I think that the NCEES was forecasting a similar trend with registration too, so okay. I don't think it's out of line. It doesn't surprise me that flat would be the number we use.
Right.
Well, and we always bring in more revenue than we're allowed to spend. So our current budget this year is $2.3 million, or actually in last fiscal, mm-hmm. this year it's $2.1
million. Right, but this is
but we bring in more like $3.4 million. Oh, so yeah. we are ending up saving sure. money. Right, and our, I don't know if you can
yeah, Neil can still not have crackers for lunch.
Right, because they won't allow us to spend more than they approve us to spend.
So put line six in there. Wrong. Neil's
line
crackers.
Six.
Neil's crackers. That's why I bake. I slam over the oven just for you. So, yeah, and they know what our fund balance is. And our fund balance is close to $4 million now.
Wow.
And they really want us to go with Salesforce. And yeah. And so we need to think about that next year, how much that might cost. And I know the medical board is putting in a request for $2.15 million to go to Salesforce. So we'll need that in addition to what we're asking for next year.
Okay, so we're looking for an action on 9B and 9C, right? And that
yes,
action will be
you.
To approve your submitted requests.
Thank you.
So I'll go ahead and just step out and make the motion that we approve staff submitted requests for the budgets and strategic plan as and strategic IT plan as submitted.
Second.
Second, any other conversation? Hearing nothing, I'll call for the question. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, motion passes.
Thank you.
Keep up the good work.
Yeah, Patty, I mean, this computer program is so temperamental. Seriously, I would have slammed my head into the computer. But Patty is very good at...
You already did at the airport.
I did, you're right.
Actually, I ran around griping and complaining a lot.
Okay, let's move on.
Sorry.
Thank you. 9D, AZBTR newsletter. I have not submitted anything.
Kurt, do you want to show them what it looks like? Kurt, we have a new program, and Kurt's very excited about it. B and C together, Kurt.
were you guys able to see the newsletter?
Yes.
Link. I saw it.
Okay. Really?
I just link.
Yeah.
Cool.
Can you highlight the links?
I like that opening shot.
I like this thing. Yeah, hold control of this. Oops. Okay, so
I got it.
Just little differences from last time. There's now I've added buttons so people can go to the next page by clicking the buttons. Before it was just a drop down. Got a nasty phone call from an older lady who did not care for the fact that she had to keep going to the top to
can I format it so I can get that button on my screen, or
you have to scroll down. But I can change it where I can make the
right there. Well, no, I just went on the.
This actually can be made smaller. It can be a large banner, a small banner, or a full screen. Right now it's set at full screen, so I can make it...
Keep it like it is.
Yeah, smaller.
No, it's good.
Okay, so let's just see
should change my... See what it's doing.
Mm-hmm. I got issues. So this was... Do you want to go through this in detail, or kind of just quickly...
You can click. This is the same article that NCWS published, except they took out Mr. Escalante's name.
They kept it, and I have your letter to the Register of Contractors.
Oh, yeah.
It, so it sends you a link to that document. I have links to the order for that case, as well as our public awareness page, which has another little thing about...
He finds those stock models instead of the actual guys.
You know what I don't like, Kurt?
On that one.
That's really messy, where you've got Arizona boundaries and then that surveyor task force overlays. There are ways to...
I'm debating just getting rid of the title of this part right here and just keeping that, but that'll be figured out, but there wasn't an article quite yet.
Okay.
For Mr. Boost, so that'll be still figured out. Question in the corner, just the preferred vendor program that home inspectors had commented on. I just typed in something real quick and also included an article that Randy West, a prior committee member, had written up some years ago and included there, as well as another article that was submitted by Melissa to...
I'm making friends at Department of Real Estate, gentlemen. I figure every couple of months they should hear from us about the home inspectors. So there you go.
Great. Strategy to move them over.
Just a synopsis of the last home inspector meeting.
Just put J-Med's name in them.
Yeah.
Letter of interest for the...
call me about questions.
Spot for David Schwartz. His term is up, so this is just criteria. Do they want to send in a letter of interest for that position?
I don't know that we want David's name up at the top.
I can take that out.
Yeah.
I can just say committee members.
Right.
And I thought we already voted them in.
We didn't. We told them they needed to submit letters, so it'll be on next month's.
And he has submitted a letter, so
he
I'll keep track of that. This informs individuals to send it to myself.
Wait, do we have that same thing for us?
No.
Governor.
I called the governor's office, guys. I did.
No, he means us being on the committee.
And then this is a picture of the plaque that's out there in the lobby.
Yeah, it's getting a lot of press, John.
Announcing our online payments. Yep. We can go right to the portal here. New revision plans Melissa had put out.
Yep.
2569. I'm actually going to have to change this now because we decided that. Well, I can still use this language with the tweaks that we did at this meeting. And I'll add it into there. About Marley being elected to NCARB Regional Director. This was originally drafted by NCARB, so I just indicated that. And I contacted Ms. Miller about it, and she was okay with me putting in our newsletter.
Ed will be out.
I just took this, I think you sent me this.
Yeah, a synopsis from the NCWS meeting.
Right, and I just plugged that in there. Just information, just links to the abouts of the budget requests, the five-year and everything, so people are interested in that. The rest of it kind of is the usual stuff that we always have.
Mugshots.
Committee members. Staff with a link to their page so you can look up their contact information. Some quick statistics about the number of registrants and firms. Canceled registrants, they just go to the link. Granted, same thing, I just post the PDFs from our meetings. Disciplinary actions goes to the disciplinary action page. And then the final page is just how to contact us. And that's it.
Looks good, Kurt.
Looks good.
Yeah, good job.
Great. Good job, man.
Hopefully easy to use, you know. Except for Andy, but...
And I
assume, well, I started seeing some of that same overlap that you saw, so...
Yeah, we have to fix that.
It'll be fine.
Confusing.
It looks nice.
So, okay to put it out there, guys? What do you think?
Yeah.
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 Great.
Yeah. We'll
tweaks.
Fix, we'll tweak it. But otherwise, good with this. Excellent.
Okay. Are we done with the newsletter?
Yes, we are.
Okay. We're going to move on to 9E. Issues regarding home inspector standards and checklist.
Yeah. You've had a few people come before the board after going through a home inspector EAC with recommendations for discipline and make their arguments to you that the checklist that sometimes is being used, maybe I should go back to, There are the home inspector standards. Those are in law. And then there's a checklist that is not law. It is something that we give to people to help them make sure they're following the standards in law, particularly applicants, but you know, people who are working in the field when they write their reports. That checklist has somehow gotten into the culture of the EACs. So sometimes the EAC will find a violation having to do with the checklist. It comes before you. The person argues that's not what the standards say. It's what the checklist says, which is law is valid, the standards are the checklist. The not visible has probably been the most controversial lately. So it's being looked at. It went through the home inspector committee. We went through the standards and went through the checklist and came up with where are they not particularly in line. The home inspector committee has seen it. They're looking at it. They're considering it. We're bringing it to you because in the meantime, you're going to continue to see home inspectors who've got through ACs and coming to the board and asking that question. So in the meantime, you've got this to look at. Because in the end, it's your interpretation of the law, not the committee's interpretation of the law that applies. So this is something for you to look at in the meantime. The committee, I think, remind me if I'm correct, the committee's going to look at it and bring their thoughts to you. But in the meantime, you're going to have cases come before you. The question is going to be, which is relevant, the standards or the checklist? You've got this in the meantime. Is that sounding correct?
Yeah. This is just to help out in the meantime. Well, right. They're going to look at both and make sure they jive.
Right. And they normally do revisions to their checklist at their November meeting. So they're anticipating they've gotten a couple of the members to work together to rectify what we see as the inconsistencies. They're going to bring the revised checklist to the whole committee in November. Then if they approve it, it will come to you for approval in December. But in the interim months, you may have need of this conflicts page just to refer to if we see a home inspector arguing that, well, I followed the checklist and it wasn't clear versus the standards. So that's just a big issue that we're working with the home inspectors on right now.
Any action items from us, Melissa?
I don't think so at this point. Like I said, probably at the December meeting just to vote to approve the new revised checklist, which will hopefully be in line with the standards.
In the meantime, when you do have matters come before you, we'll have this available so you can go, wait, what does the standard say? What does the checklist say? And can just be a guide.
Just kind of, it's staff's proactive approach to trying to resolve investigative issues when we see them arise. And we don't want there to be discrepancies between the helpful products we're trying to create to help applicants and registrants. But if there are, we need to fix those. So FYI.
Anything else on that? On 9E?
Nope.
Okay, 9F. Licensure of designer of engineering systems, and apparently the person that brought this to the board was not able to make it today.
Correct. He had asked to agendize it for a later meeting.
So do we need a vote for that, or can we just instruct staff?
What's a quick synopsis of this? Because, I mean, if this is going to be a dead issue,
okay,
let's just talk about it. I don't want to waste time over and over again on something that's just going to die.
This gentleman wants us to consider regulating designers of engineering systems.
Is that plumber?
Mechanical systems.
I don't think he's the plumber, but it's like that. And he wants to go to his legislator with support from us to do this. If these people get licensed, that we will regulate them. And
it's just adding yet another layer of regulation in Arizona where we've been trying to eliminate all this, initiative for an opportunity for employment. This now to start licensing designers of all people, for God's sakes. I mean, and I looked at the Wisconsin banner, you know, on their application. So now they're now the examining board for architects, landscape architects, professional engineers, designers, and landscape. I mean, how many, you know, just string it out. You know, how many more things are you going to put in the basket? I think there's a redundancy here. I don't know what the other board members think, but...
Well, and it also, I mean, there's no national test, so if we did this, we would have to come up with a test and make sure it works and all this stuff for how many people. I mean, this would be so costly to regulate. I agree, Gene, I don't think we should regulate anymore. And, you know, I think, especially if... I mean, if NCWS or whoever thinks this would fall under NCARB or somebody, if they had a national test and it worked out that way, maybe we'd consider it if someone else was, you know, flipping the bill for it, but this just seems silly.
Yeah, it is. Okay. So, what do we do, vote to say? Is there anything we need to do? The gentleman doesn't need to come next month?
Yeah.
Because we're not going to listen to it.
If you want to vote to say no support at this time?
Yes.
That's the general consensus, is that there's no support here for this kind of initiative.
Okay. Go ahead and make a motion.
I agree with that.
And the material he presented you all looked at, I think that's...
Yeah, it sounds restrictive to the free market and open business practices.
And I don't know that the legislature would be inclined at this point anyway.
The governor wouldn't sign anything.
He wouldn't sign it.
They'd write their own law and it'd be a mess. So let's just move on.
Okay.
Make a motion.
Okay.
Somebody make a motion.
Do we need a motion?
It's engineering. It's your deal.
I don't think we need to make them. We're not, just not going to support it. That's it.
All right.
Okay. Director's report.
Okay, director.
Okay. Quickly.
Quickly.
I'll try, James.
Move along.
Are you done yet?
I had indicated here we hadn't gotten our budget numbers since May. That was true. But we, in putting this budget together for you, had some extra provided to us from the Office of Strategic Planning and Budgeting. And we're in good financial shape, both at the end of last fiscal and the beginning of this one. We do have less money to work with this year, about $100,000 less, but hopefully we won't have the same IT costs, so I think we'll be okay. I hope you didn't have trouble parking in the visitor parking. FYI on that, the building will be renovating the lobby downstairs starting, they say, starting in October, with the hope that we will have turnstiles and detectos in there by the end of October. You will need to get badges to get in the building.
On.
I'm not kidding. I've already complained about it.
I'm not coming anymore.
What we can do to make that easier is...
It's in the airport.
Because I thought we should all have a field trip down to DOA and get our photos taken, but they said they could expedite for us. So with headshots, they can issue you badges, which hopefully we can do by September, so that you will have access to the building and the garage, which is now keyed by these badges, to park in the garage in those unreserved spaces I know you love.
So you're saying they're going to have arms?
Yes.
And we have to put our badge
to... You have to hold your badge up
You just drive right in.
This.
Not the real parking lot. First floor, you can just drive right in.
Yeah, in the visitor parking, you will still have access to that, but with a badge, you can actually enter like you did on 10th Avenue and go up the employee entrance to a parking space. So, and then you'll have your badge and you can access the building because they are going to put up glass and have the desk and then have the turnstiles that you'll need to hold your badge down and flip through. It's like going into a subway.
Can I get a retractable thing?
You can. And then clip the badge on. Yes. And we can probably make that available. So when I have more info about like the size of the photo and all the rest of that, I'll let you know.
Seriously, I'm not coming anymore.
Oh, no.
This is the last straw.
the last straw. It's for your safety.
I'm so scared.
Well, and...
Yeah, I mean, that's the safest option. Don't
things are dangerous.
Yeah.
Right here.
Exactly.
Guns.
Gun. Well, and we're getting a panic button.
That's so they know where the corpses are.
Panic button.
Are you...
Where's the panic?
Continue?
Where's the panic button going to go? Right
I'm
under your chair?
I'm going to wear it as will Doug, Patty, and Rob.
For real?
Yeah.
Help, I've fallen in a
Rob, you're scared?
I
you can take care of yourself.
Wall. Well, they don't want us to have it on the wall. They want us to wear them. Oh,
so I run out of coffee.
You want
just push
one?
Them.
Yep. And you come. You can wear the panic
button. Yeah, as long as when I get tired, okay. Like those people were talking today, just like, that's it. I've had enough.
Need an ejection seat.
You've fallen and can't get
see you later. Come and take me away.
And they're going to be hardwired right to DPS, so they come and save us.
Yeah. In about an hour and a half.
Where's located?
Down the street.
And how long will it take them to get
I have no idea. They're going to have to
corpses.
Practice.
Corpses.
When
yes. Seconds count, it's only minutes away.
Here's where we're
at. Right. So, it'll probably be October
so
before
stupid.
You see the panic buttons that we all wear. I said I wanted a decorative lanyard because, anyway. But it's not a bad idea because when the enforcement staff hosts EACs, if it's here, if it's in the other place, they can have one of those buttons in case sure. Someone gets unruly and we need the police because our front desk won't know what's going on. They don't know what's going on in here and they don't know what's going on in the kitchen.
Lord.
I know. But you know what? This is responsible. In this day and age, we hear about these ridiculous shootings and all kinds of terrible things every day. I don't want anything happening to you guys, to my staff, or to the public that visits us. And so I think I'm taking it seriously.
Well,
it's
just all
responsibility.
Come armed?
No, that's unlawful, because I ask, and I just bring my knife into the
building?
I thought
we could check our guns downstairs.
Well, what's that?
Maybe I'm able to, but it doesn't help.
Don't shoot me. Hold on.
Yeah.
I'll be right back. I'm going to run downstairs and get my gun out of the locker.
I'll hit my panic button on the way down.
Yeah.
Hit the panic button. Yeah. Anyway, so that's the latest. Hopefully we'll have those by September, but in all likelihood, maybe not until October. The data cleanse project is delayed. Surprise, surprise. We were hoping it would be done by August 30th. We have received a very, very optimistic progress report from the vendor. This morning, I'm pushing back saying there's no way we can go live and then upload extra data after that. I mean, it's just, it's probably going to be September 30th. Bless you. But we're working on it, trying to keep them on the straight and narrow. You saw online renewals. We did hire a lady to replace Carly at the front desk, but I understand that she will be leaving us.
What?
Her mother is ill, yes, so we'll have to post that position again.
Oh my God.
I did talk to the governor's office, and there is an engineer candidate 80% through. I don't know what that means, and I don't know who that engineer candidate is, whether it hopefully will be someone to replace Mr. Cranky Pants here.
He probably doesn't,
hope so.
He probably doesn't have a utility bill or a voter registration.
That could be.
driver's license.
And they did express concern that it's been so hard to find people interested because they've only been reaching out to the universities. So we suggest that they reach out to the association.
To the actual
to find folks
the industry.
That might be. Right. So we'll see what happens. We did get approval to go into the rulemaking process for two of the four requests. We are not allowed to pursue a retired status because that's too much. And we are not allowed to pursue describing or redefining other misconduct at this point. And I don't have an explanation just that you're not allowed to do that. So we'll proceed with the other two rules. We're allowed to removing cash from the fees rule and clarifying the home inspector rule. And you may have seen in the newsletter, I invited ROC to come and talk to us about those national construction firms. not using Arizona licensees to design and survey and conduct geology and landscape architecture here. They said, rather than visit with you, why don't you write an article? And they'll, so I did, and they're putting it in their news bulletin, saying that it's a very dry, lawyerly letter, but it's going in. And the same to Department of Real Estate and the home inspectors about their preferred vendor program.
Yeah,
so Department of Real Estate's going to publish an article saying you can't entice home inspectors to violate their unprofessional conduct rule.
I don't know if this is the right place to ask this question, maybe later on, but I'd like to ask you guys, we don't regulate the construction industry, yet we have construction companies, large construction companies with staff that they call project engineers, and they're not engineers. Is that okay? I mean, nothing we can do about it? Is there any controversy about that with anybody?
I think we need to agenda as that.
Yeah,
as a future topic.
That's not part of this.
Project engineer. And you know, Neil, that question does come up. So it might be good to talk about it.
It came up with a surveyor here
recently.
Oh.
A surveyor worked for a firm. So let's get it on a future agenda and move along with that.
And I don't know if Gene told you, but he is going to go to Flagstaff in September, so he won't be here at our meeting to take part in ABET's review of NAU. Yes.
Yeah, fine.
Mm-hmm. And then, obviously, through the budget request you saw, I put in a request to have additional AG services to help us with our backlog. And Kurt and I are writing complaints and notices of hearing and sending them over to the AG, some as drafts, some we are, you know, we have scheduled here at the board. And we are also keeping a spreadsheet so we know where complaints are in the process. And hopefully we'll be able to clear out a lot of the old moldy files so you won't see things that are 2 and 3 years old coming before you for approval of a consent or a deem or something like that.
So this $80,900 is twice what you had in the budget?
Nearly, yeah.
Why wasn't this in the budget?
It was. That's the additional...
It said 40-something.
Yeah, Patty broke that out in the justification. We pay about 40% of Scott's salary, and then we'll be paying about 25% of Deanie's salary for a total of almost $81,000 from our budget going to the AG.
Okay.
So, and then as a result of Gene going to NAU, I reached out to the engineering dean and career development to see if they maybe wanted Gene to speak to students up there or if they wanted me. We haven't heard back.
You're kidding me.
No. And I've done this every year for the past 3 or 4 years, and they never take us up on our offer. But, you know. And then I even asked Alejandro, and you know how he can be cranky about it too. So he said he would reach out to the engineering school at U of A and see if they... And I have gone down to the engineering school, but not in the past year and a half.
When I get there, I'm going to talk to the faculty.
Okay.
So they're going to hear from me about the merits and the value of licensure and why you all, you know, should get on board with that.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously they have different agendas, and they're, you know, it's been pushing on a rope right now. We're not having that kind of enthusiasm that one might expect.
I wonder if it's that case that their professors, they're not licensed.
Yeah, of course they're not
and
licensed.
So there's this little tug of war.
They don't yet quite see
you know,
the value in their occupation.
Okay.
But it's very narrow, and we need to broaden their purview as to what licensure in practice entails. And I think that's why it's going to be helpful for me to be there, to talk to the faculty and the students about, you know, the world at large, you know, the world beyond the walls of the university.
Right.
And hopefully, you know, shine some light on that.
And the, I mean, I actually went to NEU and spoke to a geology department head because my son went, is interested in geology. And he actually said good things about the board, which I was pleased about. So they understand things have changed here. I just don't know that they understand we will come and do outreach to the students and answer questions about licensure if necessary. So we'll keep trying. I will just defer to those of you who went to the NCWS annual meeting to summarize.
We've got item 14. I was going to spend some time in there.
Just a little bit. So that's good.
Yeah, it'll make it quick.
Thank you.
Is that any questions?
Yeah.
I just want to thank you and Patty for all of your work with rulemaking. You know, since I've been involved with the board, you guys put an immense amount of effort in that. And sometimes it just doesn't pan out. I mean, the hard work is there and everything's there, and then it just gets tossed into the wind. And I just want to thank you guys and recognize all the hard work that you put into it.
Okay.
Okay, next item, 13B.
What about 11?
I don't know. It's not on my PDF.
Nothing to report.
Oh. Well, Madison is still with us.
Assistant Attorney General report. Nothing
to
report.
Threatening to quit. Okay. Well, Scott, do you have anything?
No.
Thank you.
Good answer.
13 standing committees, L&R.
We don't have a meeting date. We haven't been able to get a quorum, unfortunately.
Okay. We will move on to 13B, Home Inspector Rules and Standards.
I think Kurt included the draft minutes, right?
I see them on page 2389.
And again, the big issue was the distinctions there between the checklist and the standards. So.
That and the vendor preferred program. That was a big thing.
That's a big thing.
Recruiting for new committee members.
Yep, that was the big thing.
Okay, anything else on home inspectors? Hearing nothing, we'll go to item 14. I'll start with the NCEES. I added this item. At the meeting, our counterpart from Nevada put together this thing to kind of pull the states together, and it's really kind of just like a pledge letter. And I looked at it, and I thought, geez, we could probably sign that right now with very little impact to what we do. No impact, really, I thought. But as a gesture of goodwill, I thought it might be nice to be the first state to sign this with NCEES. But they really haven't taken an action yet. So I might be acting a little prematurely by offering this to the board. Yeah, Melissa?
When you're done, I would love a chance to address this as well.
Okay. I didn't see anything here that looked out of line with what we do in the state. My thought was this, if we sign it first and sign it now, we'll see what happens with it at NCEES. I don't think there's anything official with it, though. It's just kind of a pledge to say we're all going to work together.
What's the point?
I think that's really kind of you, and my concern is, it's gonna, what my understanding now, and I did email all the directors because there's been hubbub about this particular thing on their directors page. What are you trying to accomplish with this, and why would I want to spend time reviewing Wyoming's rules and laws, and why would I want Patty Mamola looking at our rules and laws? Is it to promote model law? Because if it is, Arizona is never going to be able to do that because we're a combined board and we don't require ABET education. So logistically, we can sign this, but it's not going to be something we can enforce with model law. We've already undertaken a review of our laws and rules. We tried our legislation last session and it didn't go anywhere. So we've had our AG look at our laws. We've done all of this.
Probably we'll need your AG's advice. Maybe bring it back
on whether or not you can sign it.
Right. Anyway.
At the time it was introduced, she did say, states said that they would need to talk to their AGs. So you might want to just put it on next month.
So the attractive language here is that it's resolved that the following signatories agreed to license in NCEES Model Law Committee applicant that meets the national standards in the most expeditious manner available within the scope of the current state licensing laws and rules, and furthermore be it, and they have two more resolutions.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. I mean, it's really kind of a hollow document.
It is. So why are we bothering? And so you know...
Because it is a goodwill gesture.
I know, you're nice. But this is already proposed to be edited.
Okay.
And another state has already said they're not going to comply. And I put out there that I'm not going to try to embarrass another state by criticizing their statutes and rules. And I won't tolerate another state criticizing our statutes and rules.
I don't think we need NCEES to tell us what to do. I don't like them already.
Well, and one of the themes that came clearly across at the meeting, and I'm sure you might recall hearing, is there are members amongst NCEES staff that are trying to actually raise the bar here. They're trying to make things more difficult for licensure, and I don't think we want necessarily to be a party of that in Arizona. We want to encourage more licensure. I think that the idea to get more people to be practitioners with licenses is better than trying to look for exclusivity. You know, we don't want to be the Ivy League, if you wish, amongst licensees in the nation. I mean, what does that get us? And that's where some of the members of the staff, the NC staff, is
moving. Right. Well, in the model law, I put this out also, I'm waiting, does not enhance mobility because it requires special education and payment of additional fees to the National Council to have the council record, which to me is a deterrent to registration. So I won't be popular with regard to the comments I've made, but if they come out with something that RAG says is okay and you think is okay, then I say, yes, we could entertain being diplomatic and maybe sign it. But
so at 4:30 this morning in the dark, I hit a jackrabbit on Highway 93, and he's dead. So let's just throw this in the pile with the jackrabbit right now and move along.
That works for me.
I just want to highlight Melissa here in the enforcement beat of the NCEES. There's Melissa's lovely picture.
Yeah.
You signed this for me.
Oh, yeah. She signed it.
This is the article of the criminal conviction for use of seals. So, once again, we're setting the path there for the rest of the country in enforcement.
Right, and we got recognition for that. Several people have commented that we're one of the first states they're aware of taking any action against stamp and seal fraud.
Yeah, so it's
really
why should we get signed onto one of these things?
I have this, or is this yours?
Okay, stamp somewhere else.
You can send the mail to you.
Yeah.
You can have your wall.
No,
that's
all right.
Pretty funny.
You can have it.
So yeah, thank you. So I figure it's good.
Yeah,
we'll keep
good
promoting what
yeah.
good things
keep
we
it.
Do.
So and this is a credit to
who's
Doug
one?
Parlin and his staff too.
Yep.
Is that one yours?
And we sent it to the governor's office too.
What?
So
you
want
it? You can have it. Yeah. Cool. Sure.
So that is still NCEES. Scott, you're itching over there. Am I doing something wrong?
Just
okay.
Making sure.
Sorry.
Sure.
Okay, so that's our NCEES report. We're looking at the survey exam modules. That's coming up too, so you'll see some public hubbub about that with NCEES. Maybe I'll put something together for the newsletter on that.
So I got a question about your meeting. Was it the same six guys getting up every single time and talking about the same things over and over and over again?
No, it was a little bit different this one. We actually had a tie vote. There was an actual 50-50 vote.
Split?
But after the longest period, but what they do is they alternate. Anyone in favor, stand up, you know, and then anyone opposed it. And this went on and on. I mean, talk about a panic button you want to hit. I mean, that was... I was just that was painful.
It was on the technology degree.
It was
right?
on the technology degree.
Yeah.
I mean, but for us it was moot, but we had to endure that whole thing, and then the vote came down 50-50.
Yeah.
Did anyone take any pictures of Alejandro sleeping?
No. No.
No?
50-50, that's funny.
That was exactly, it was the only time in the history of that. I mean, here you got a hole full of hundreds of people. And for all, in fact, one state split, right, Patty? I think
South Carolina.
They actually split, and that wasn't enough to break the tie. The tie came in absolutely even.
We voted no.
Exhausting. Yeah, we voted no.
We voted no. Yeah. Good. Yeah.
So
you
did vote yes on something.
Uh-oh. Not important.
I forgot. Test question. That's the only thing you could vote yes on.
It was very rare. Yes.
Cool.
Okay, that's NCEES. That was item 14. Does anybody have any other items for 14? ASBOG? I volunteered to go to that.
Yeah, so you and Steve will go, and I think Rob is going to go as well. And then CLARB related, they're going to have... they're hopefully going to announce their new executive director at the meeting in September. And Kurt's going with you to that. And then there will be a new ASLA executive director as well. Apparently there's a big brouhaha over whoever was the director was thrown out of the ASLA, the National Association. So,
How do you find out about that?
Yeah. So, I talked to Galen. Galen gave me all the...
I've got to call into him.
Yeah, so he'll fill you in.
Okay. I did sit in through that webinar.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
You know, it came up, you go onto their screen, to their website, and the agenda comes up, and they go through it all. Missy's got her high squeaky voice that you're trying to pay attention to. And then it got to a point where they wanted us to vote on something. And they said, type in your name and which state. And so I'm looking at my screen. Well, where would I type? There's nothing there. I'm on mute. Missy's controlling the mute. So I can't, well, where do I type this in? There's nothing here for me to type onto.
Great.
So, oh, thanks for everybody voting. And she just moved right on. So I'm wondering how many other people got kind of help out of that. So I'll talk to her. I don't think
you didn't vote to raise dues or anything,
no.
Did you? Okay, good.
I think it was a pretty innocuous issue at the time, but I was kind of frustrated. So
okay.
I'll ask her about that.
Yeah.
But there's lots of discussion going on about some of these issues coming up in that meeting regarding some of the regions, how they're going to try and do some of that. I'm not sure. They're trying to do assignments of positions
from
the board versus from the regions.
Right, and you voted against that last year because that means they're going to handpick who they want to be on the board rather than board members being represented and voted upon by the population. So, yeah, that's the big issue. Interesting.
Okay. Is that it for CLARB?
Yeah.
And CARB?
You'll be there, too, during our board meeting's the week before.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the day before.
Day before. That's right.
Okay. Anything on NCARB? Rob's going to Certificate Review Committee in D.C. in October.
Yes.
Okay. Awesome. We did NCEES. ABET we covered with Gene going up to Flagstaff. Survey Task Force, we will meet tomorrow. We're still refining our definitions and descriptions and collecting information. Future board meetings, September 24th, 2019.
Still a restricted access.
Suggested topics for future meeting agendas. Neil, what was your thingy you were talking about? Contractors?
We don't have jurisdiction over the construction industry, but do we have, I just want to know what people feel, is it okay for staff and construction offices to have the title on their business card, project engineer, when they're not an engineer?
Well,
They're not even, they went to school for construction management. I guess there's a degree in construction engineering. I don't know. I kind of heard a rumor there is.
There is.
So can you call yourself a project engineer? Is that okay? Yeah. As long as you don't call yourself a professional engineer?
That's the legal advice the board's gotten in the past, that it's the term professional registered engineer,
right,
professional landscape architect, professional surveyor, that we protect. And, you know, by protect, I mean opening
sure.
a complaint against somebody who's unlicensed for deceptively advertising or holding themselves out to the public as qualified. But the generic engineer
right.
is a term of art, like architect.
Software engineer.
Yeah. Right.
However, I have seen in New York, in public authorities, okay, where it's not agendized. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so the topic
yeah.
is going to be
next time.
Registrants and contractors and definitions. Does that work for you?
Sure.
Okay.
Titles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Parentheses, Neil. Okay. Any other suggested topics?
I have a question for Mr. Harlan.
Yes.
Is the that school board issue coming up on next month's agenda?
Yes,
we'll be there. Can I say to everyone, it's really, really important. This is a big one.
You know. Can we talk about it afterwards?
Is this a future topic?
Or
are you suggesting
a case
it's a case.
Next month?
Are you suggesting a future topic?
Yeah. No, I'm just saying it.
Be here.
Very important. Be here.
Or be square, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk after the meeting.
Okay, so we have an important future topic that we all got to be here next month with our parking arrangements and our walk-through turnstiles and
not
leave
yet.
Your gun at home. Man.
She said next month it won't be in
it
place,
be
so
in
I'll
place
be here.
But
yeah. All right,
October,
does anybody want to move to adjourn?
So moved.
Adjourn. Aye.
Thank
second.
You.
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you for
great.
Your patience,
thank
guys.
You, ladies
thank you.
And gentlemen.
All right, guys.